WBAI, as we are in this really significant transitional period, and we are reaching out to you because you are the ones that we serve. You are the reason we're here. You are as much a part of this partnership, maybe more than all of us who work on this side of the mic. We can't do it without your support. 516-620-3602 is the number to call, and the amount we're asking you to support us is a $200 pledge, and this is a $200 pledge to support WBAI, but you are also going to be able to create for yourself the opportunity to be an educator, to take this information, to share it, to pass it on. That's the power of this pledge. We understand that you're supporting the radio station with your pledge of $200. It's making it possible for us to keep the tower on the Empire State Building, to keep broadcasting at this signal. That's what you're providing us when you make that pledge. But we're also looking at you as one of us, one of the workers who's out there who wants to spread the information, who wants to educate people. You know, make some copies of this DVD, give it to your friends and your coworkers, but tell them to tune in to 99.5 FM. That's really what you're allowing yourself to do, to be part of the force that's going to make a change in this world. And we can each be empowered to do that. First, by showing your support. Second, by sharing the information. 516-620-3602 is the number to call.
516-620-3602. It's looking like we're going to have to be wrapping up. So I want just to thank you so very much, listeners, for calling up. Keep those calls coming in. The Power Principle, it is yours. 3 DVD set, make as many copies as you like. It is yours for a contribution of $200. And you can put it on your Visa, MasterCard, American Express. Do your payment plan through your credit card. That would be wonderful. 516-620-3602. I want to thank Ife. Thank you so very much for all your wonderful work. I want to thank Kathy Davis for joining me. I'm Christine Blasdale. Stay tuned for more Fun Drive programming coming your way right here on WBAI 99.5.
My name's Chris Hedges. I'm the author with the cartoonist Joe Sacco of Days of Destruction, Days of Revolt. And when Joe and I are in New York, we always listen to WBAI 99.5 or WBAI.org because we want to stay informed and not get fed the commercial lies of the corporate media.
Was a long time ago, longer now than it seems, in a place that perhaps you've seen in your dreams. For the story that you are about to be told began with the holiday worlds of old. Now you've probably wondered where holidays come from. If you haven't, I'd say it's time you begun. For the holidays are the result of much fuss and hard work for the worlds that create them for us. Well, you see now, quite simply, that's all that they do, making one unique holiday especially for you. But once a calamity ever so great occurred when two holidays met by mistake.
Something strange.
Come with us and you will see. This is our town of Halloween.
This is Halloween. This is Halloween. Pumpkins scream in the dead of night.
This is Halloween. Everybody make a scene.
Trick or treat.
Tell the neighbors on a diaphragm.
It's our town. Everybody's
cool. It's town on Halloween.
I am the one hiding under your bed. Teeth ground sharp and eyes glowing red.
I am the one hiding under your stairs. Fingers like snakes and spiders in my hair.
This is Halloween, this is Halloween, 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 Halloween.
In this town we call home, everyone hail to the pumpkin song.
In this town, don't we love it now? Everybody's waiting for the next surprise.
Round that corner man hiding in the trash can, something's waiting now to pounce and howl. You'll scream,
this is Halloween.
Red and black
and slimy green,
aren't you scared?
Well, that's just fine. Say it once, say it twice, take a chance and roll the dice. Right with the moon in the dead of night.
Everybody scream, everybody scream.
Follow the trace.
I am the who in the cold stare.
I am the wind blowing through your hair.
I am the shadow on the moon at night, filling your dreams to the brim with fright.
This is Halloween, this is Halloween. Halloween, 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 Halloween,
Halloween, Halloween, Halloween.
Jingle-a-lums everywhere. Life's no fun without a good scare.
That's our job,
but we're not mean.
In our town of Halloween.
In this town, don't we love it now?
Everyone's waiting for the next surprise.
Stick it to Jack, might catch you in the back and
scream like a banshee, make you jump out of your skin.
This is Halloween, everybody scream.
Won't you please make way for a very special guy?
Lawman Jack is king of the pumpkin patch. Everyone hail to the pumpkin king.
This is Halloween, 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 Halloween.
In this town we call home, everyone hail to the pumpkin song.
I say, Sylvester, are you in bed? Come out here.
I can't. I'm in my nightwear.
Oh, well, never mind then. I don't want to tell you that your bedroom's supposed to be haunted. I don't suppose that'll worry you. Breakfast at 9, if you're allowed to eat any. Good night.
Oh, I say, look here. I can't stay in here. I mean, my mother told me to keep away from the spirits. I say, hello, my good fellow. Hello.
Trombone and the old ham bone is suddenly thrown. You are all alone with the great unknown in the haunted house. There's only one good spirit, it's the spirit in the bottle. With shaking hands you pull the cork and pour some down your throttle. There's a clank of chains and the smell of brains and a gory stain where the duke was slain. If you've got chilblains and varicose pains in the haunted house. The old oak beam hangs a corpse, you seem to feel a wet stream with a sinister gleam, and you wake with a scream from a horrible dream of a haunted house. But a cavalier with a dreadful leer tries to disappear through the chiffonier, and you cling with fear to the chandelier. It's the haunted house. The air is full of clammy claws that clutch you by the collar, so gargle night and morning just in case you have to holler.
There are lights and sprites and awful sights in flesh-pink tights. But at dead of night comes a woman in white, so you're quite all right in the haunted house. When the old church clock strikes 12, there's a knock with a sudden shock. You remember the lock on the door, and there's a crock. Oh, why do you mock at the haunted house? Black as pitch and your eyeballs twitch in the darkest niche. It's a dirty witch and the lighting switch is out of reach in the haunted house. When the slavey spills the gravy, why is she so pallid? Something post her in the pantry when she fetched the salad.
I'm filled with dread, yes, I'm nearly dead. I saw a head underneath my bed. Come out if you can, I can do with a man
in the haunted house.
Ah, Artie Shaw.
Says you, indeed.
Says you. I'm taking your word for it, but it's a great tune, Nightmare.
Yes. Jack Shug's theme song for some of his...
Is that how I know it?
Some of his late-night endeavors. It wasn't
right.
The porno show theme song.
No.
Say, Jim.
Yes,
reach
Max.
Over behind you, and could you turn down? These headphones are really loud. There's a row of knobs by your knee.
Oh, yes.
I'm not sure which one it is, though.
Oh, well, okay. I see
maybe,
a lot of knobs.
Maybe the third. Okay. Much better. Ah.
That was the first.
This is one.
That was...
Hey, and now I'm at the table. I'm not engineering.
Oh, and you can do...
And now I can do what everybody I engineer for does.
You can do the percussion, yes.
Yeah. Great springs on these microphones.
I pointed that out to a... musician who I had on the show, and he was reading a story, and so he actually used it in the story, and it was a ghost story, and it was so perfect.
Hiding under the bed springs.
The great chicken heart is coming.
Let me hand the mic over to someone sitting next to me. All the great tricks of WBAI radio
actually,
in this new
studio.
Actually,
that's a pretty good door creaking sound, if you think about it.
And what better night? When the veil is thin.
Ooh, okay. I didn't even know you were wearing a veil.
Holes
I couldn't tell over the radio.
Yes, and there's holes in the bed sheets tonight.
Yes. There's holes in the bed sheets tonight. Happy Samhain, everybody. This is not Earthwatch, in case you haven't noticed. This is an Hour of the Wolf Samhain Spectacular, as we call it. But
Spirit Watch,
even,
we'll call it.
Oh, that's excellent. That's excellent. Welcome to Spirit Watch, everybody, as opposed to In the Spirit Watch, if we were going to real WBAI history. But speaking of WBAI
or
history...
Ether Watch.
Yeah, ooh, well, that actually sounds very modern, gadget.
Okay, well, let's
because everybody's coming out with glasses or
Aether.
Watches now.
We'll call it Aether.
Ooh,
watch.
Better yet, yeah, there you go.
That was the Aether I meant.
Oh, okay. So, I am Jim Freund, with me, Max Schmid. Between the two of us, about 60 years of WBAI history. Is that
and
right?
14 teeth.
Oh. Yeah. Well, no, I've got a full mouth now,
you
but
do.
They're fake. Or as I was saying to listeners, and nobody except one person got it, and that was a friend of mine, not on the air, I said, okay, new teeth. What were we talking about? Oh, yes, Barcelona. And nobody knew what I was referring to. I was so disappointed.
I wonder if they covered that in the recent new documentary. The Tenth Doctor or whatever debuted last week.
Yes, I haven't watched that one yet.
Yeah.
But so you got it.
I get all the...
No, wait a second. You're the second person who got the reference.
Because you explained it to me last week.
Oh, is that
yes.
It?
Oh,
yes. Okay. Well, you're...
And I get these summaries of Twitter, which show me BBC tweets from last week. So I see that it premiered last Saturday.
Yes, it was on. I didn't even bother recording it because I'll go to BBC America on demand and I'll watch it there. Because otherwise you get a 2-hour episode, which I've already got, the DVD and Netflix of. So yeah, why do I need...
You don't need the episodes.
I really don't.
Especially for this late in the game.
Yeah.
Now, the earlier shows where they reviewed the first several Doctors, I bet that stuff was fascinating, and I missed all of those.
Actually, almost all of those are available on Netflix if you look under Classic Doctor Who.
Uh-huh.
On streaming Netflix. And they've got about 40, 45 episodes, and I've watched... four episodes of the new six episodes of the new nine, The Web of Fear, starring Patrick Troughton. You know that they've recovered, like, a whole bunch of early Doctor Whos
from Africa. They actually have them.
Oh, they're released.
Oh, I knew that they had found them. I didn't know they were anywhere.
Oh, they're out to the public in England.
Yeah.
And
blocked from our servers, I bet.
No, they're selling it.
Ah, okay. Well, then why wouldn't they do that worldwide?
Well, they probably will. Mm. And they're certainly going to gear up for that before the Day of the Doctor.
Right. Now, speaking of the BBC and changing from Doctor Who for a moment.
Changing from Doctor Who.
Someone has sent me a link to a BBC documentary on a program that has its 75th anniversary tomorrow.
Ooh.
The Orson Welles War of the Worlds, of course.
Oh, yes.
And they did it. PBS had one the other night that met with...
Less than stellar.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the BBC one, I haven't had a chance to listen to it, and we don't even know if the link will work in the United States.
Once
I get a chance to check it...
Is there a secondary, you know, dramatization or a book or anything that you endorse or recommend?
It's secondary in what sense?
Oh, you know, in other words, something, a documentary about the Orson Welles event.
I understand.
Leif Schreiber, though, was pretty good.
Radiolab did one on NYC. On Saturday, which I hear also takes the, widespread panic theory and ran with it.
Yeah, but that's not true, is it?
There were
people, yes.
There's a great deal of dispute over how much panic was actually caused.
Yeah, I mean, Howard Koch, said...
See facebook.com/Max Golden Age. You'll find a link to the Slate... article from yesterday.
Okay. And what did they debunk a lot of?
Pretty much.
Yeah,
yes,
I've heard a lot of debunking about it. And you know, one of the people that totally promoted the idea that there was a huge panic was, unsurprisingly, Orson Welles.
Well, most of the information was that seminal book by, what was his name? The Panic Broadcast, back in 1948. And most of the, you know, people sourcing that the broadcast called caused this widespread panic came from this one book.
Yeah.
Which cites, not much of anything in the way of statistics.
Yeah, I mean, as far as we can tell, there were some isolated people and incidents, most of whom were laughed at.
Yes.
And that's my understanding of what really went down.
Well,
on the other hand, they were really nuts, those few people.
Yes, but it seems that the reason the newspapers made such a big deal out of it, because you saw the headlines, you know, panicked,
right,
was because...
They're newspapers.
Because they were trying to put down radio as a source of news.
Really?
Yes, the newspapers were just defending their turf, and they were attacking radio... Because it was, you know, I guess they could see the future of how news would be disseminated.
Yeah, and of course the big joke is that, you know, this is not long after the day of yellow journalism, and this is, of course, before Wells has totally attacked the news industry in Citizen Kane.
I wonder if maybe that's why he did. Maybe that's part of why.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Because, there were congressional hearings, and, you know, in December or sometime shortly after, it just dropped. They were going to enforce, you can't do this sort of broadcast. And I think they set maybe, gentlemen's agreement type rules in place, but there was never any legislation or fines or penalties for the broadcast.
Yeah. And you can't really do that anyway, can you? You can't do that on radio, as has been said in the past.
Although, did you hear Off the Hook a week ago?
No.
Ah, Emmanuel played probably for the second time in maybe 10 years. Apparently he had done this once before. But he had put together a 20-minute segment talking about the new country BAI, or the new country 99.5, with like five country songs in a row.
And yeah.
10,000 non-commercial songs from country BAI 99.5.
Uh-huh.
20 minutes he played that at the start of his show.
Okay. That's a show I would usually reserve for in April, although we certainly hope that we can make it to next April.
It was a fundraising gambit.
Yeah, and a smart one, too, may I say.
And a likely one, too.
Yeah, well, no. Country, I don't think so.
No. Not unless they sell it outright, the license, that is.
But they can't do that.
No, they can't.
They can't do that. Legally, they cannot do that. There's all kinds of... All I keep reminding people of is the WNCN Listeners Guild. Do you remember that?
I've actually recently heard a tape of the transition period.
From NCN to QIV and then back to NCN?
Yes, or was it... I just found it online within the last month.
Oh, interesting.
Some kind of an appeal to, you know, save their station.
Yeah, I mean, well, what happened was NCN basically was sold outright to QIV, Quad 4, Q and then IV for 4. Yeah, okay. It was a quad freeform rock station. And the saddest part
and
of this
first
whole
song?
Story is, no, it's not Roll Over Beethoven.
I heard the tape, unless it's some other station.
No, you're right. You're right. That was it.
Yes.
That was it. Yes.
That's what I heard online.
I was confusing it for a minute with PLJ.
And their first song was what, White Port and Lemon Juice?
Yes, it was.
Well,
absolutely.
Of course.
But a lot of
I wish I had some
Yes. a number of the QIV people were former... PLJ freeformers and NEW freeformers. You know, the problem is that NCN was a great classical station, but QIV was really good. Mm. They were the best thing since WPLJ, and PLJ, of course, only was freeform for about like a year and a half before the plug was pulled on them.
But it didn't stay QIV, did it? What did it...
Well, the WNCN Listeners Guild came into being, largely housed at the Church of WBAI, led on by such people as Sarah Fishko, who I think is on New York Public Radio nowadays, a wonderful person, and James Ursay. I wonder where he is now. Oh, he's on our air.
Fridays at 10 or 11, depending on whether we're in Fun Drive or not.
Yeah, and he wasn't a member of NCM, but he certainly supported the idea. And there was an FCC challenge on QIV, which said that there was no other 24-hour-a-day classical station. QXR was the closest thing to it, but they're saying that it didn't serve the same community in the same way. So after about 8 months, the FCC mandated that QIV be sold to somebody who would represent 24/7 classical music. Somewhere in here, GAF, owned by Henry Fonda, was involved. I think that they were maybe the original NCN, and they were the ones who sold to QIV.
GAF.
Remember
the
chemical company, the lab, the photo and lab producing company, GAF. You can hear Henry Fonda's voice saying the words.
Didn't they make tape at some point?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, all right.
Absolutely. You know, a competitor to BASF.
Ah, okay.
Okay, so there are a chemical lab and...
Oh, I thought you were talking about a radio station, GAF. No, you're talking about a manufacturer, GAF.
I'm talking about a manufacturer and well-known company, and they owned NCN.
Hmm.
I don't remember if they were the ones who sold it or the ones who bought it. So WNCN came back by mandate of the FCC on the grounds that the appeal to the FCC was that the community was not being served.
You mean it worked?
It worked.
I didn't know that.
That's the whole point of the story.
Uh-huh.
The FCC mandated that you must serve the community in the same manner. Now, one person I've spoken to about this story recently said, but that's not what happened at WEVD, where WEVD became Disney. But that's a whole other story. And EVD, which apparently, according to this person, was under a leased management agreement.
Now, was that the station where you could rent an hour?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Usually
one,
a half
one
hour.
Of them, actually. There might have been more stations that did that.
Basically, but they were the primary one. And it was a long way. EVD was actually named after Eugene V. Debs. Yeah. And after a while, they did two things. Number one, they maintained late at night foreign language programming. And during the day, in prime time, they were leasing out to people. You could pay. There was a guy who did a talk sci-fi radio show there. Tony Tellado and Ernest Lilly.
Name sounds vaguely familiar.
Yeah, you've met at least Tony, I think.
But wasn't it, I thought it was mostly like ethnic.
No, they were doing foreign language stuff, but that's not the pay for stuff. The pay for stuff was you paid a certain price.
Right.
And you then had to sell your own commercials.
And that wasn't all health stuff that they did?
No.
No.
God, no. It was mostly horse racing tips. I kid you
is
not.
Is that even legal? So
yes.
So we could have the Gypsy Witch Dream Channel?
So, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Astrology? Numerology? Phrenology?
Speaking of WBAI, yes. Yes. That's exactly what they did on EVD for a number of years. But it was a long, long transition. You know, so they were long, long removed from whatever community they were serving before Disney, Radio Disney, took over the EVD spotlight, or frequency, anyway.
And how did they? They bought it,
I think they bought it. I think the frequency finally just went up, and nobody was going to challenge there because nobody cared.
Mm. Well, but ladies and gentlemen, if you care, maybe we should talk about the reason we're gathered here this evening.
I think we should do that. Aside from celebrating Samhain, let us consider the other side of Samhain, the scary side, the side. The, you know, we're no longer in the imagine the world without WBAI. I played that Bill Murray bit a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, yes.
A little classic thing off of That's Not Funny, That's Sick from the National Lampoon, where he actually does five bits on BAI pitching. And of course, it has always been a imagine a world without WBAI. Well, that could be months away. Maybe even weeks. We don't know. That was a nice pan they did on that song there.
Just yes. Oh, there's
from one ear to the other.
Where the whistle goes from one side to the other.
Yeah, very nicely done. Thank you. And you know, we're not just in desperate straits here. Check out the Village Voice. Pacifica has offered people to, if they want to operate their own Pacifica station, they can.
Yes.
It stays Pacifica, but somebody else comes in and makes it their own. Some conspiracy theorists would say this is the first step towards moving it to a commercial station, because we are a commercial frequency.
Yes, commercial license, isn't it?
We have a commercial license. Right. We couldn't be at 99.5 FM with 50,000 watts effective radiated power if we were not commercial. We would be below a certain number, and we would be limited in wattage.
Right?
I believe something like that. And NYC, because it was municipally owned, somehow got past that barrier. And I believe they're also 25,000 watts.
And where are they? Where's their tower? It's not an empire, I don't think.
I'm not sure.
Hmm, interesting.
I'm not sure. I mean, it has to be something. It's not as good as ours, but no doubt they're saving money somehow.
But here's an interesting thing about this leasing business.
Yeah.
There have been court cases in California where other outlets have tried this sort of thing.
And we are legally speaking a California outlet.
Well, yes, but more than that, we are also a non-commercial station.
Yes.
So In commercial business, it's called a lease management arrangement. However, in non-commercial terms, there's a whole different arrangement.
It's a public service.
I don't know what it's, whatever it's called.
Thingy.
The courts have ruled that the people, the person renting out the space cannot profit from it.
That's right.
They can recover their outlay, right, their expenses, but they cannot make a profit.
Right. But on the other hand, you know, people's salaries, you know, they bring in people, and if a manager gets $5 million a year, I'm obviously making up numbers here, you know, that you can say, okay, that person gets $5 million, and that's not profit.
Well, but what it boils down to...
There's at least one nonprofit New York outlet in New York in which the manager of that gets more than $1 million.
But my point with all of that is,
yes,
that if Pacifica can sense no real advantage going ahead with this leased arrangement...
Yes.
In other words, if the WBAI, as we know it, can show that it can operate within its budget...
Aha!
...and pay all of its expenses...
Then we ourselves will become our own leasors.
Well, we're hoping that that will be the
in
case.
Essence,
And this fund drive that we're ending tomorrow...
This is the beginning of the end
has come
of the drive.
We've come very close to meeting the budget.
We actually have.
Which is something that this station
it's
has
shocking,
not done in years.
Yeah.
So our on-air fundraising has been relatively successful.
But you have put actually what I consider a very positive spin on why people should pledge. It's what I haven't really thought of, which is...
If we prove we're self-sustaining, what's the point of leasing it outside?
Well, no, let's us lease it. Let's WBAI prove to Pacifica we're as good as anybody who would lease it.
Yeah, yeah. And we're self-sustaining.
So, you know, in order to do that, though, we need a premium that isn't, you know, the green drink or the...
Well, green drink would be highly appropriate on a night like this. Green slime drink. You know, I won tickets to see Green Slime from Zachary or some DJ.
Did you really?
You know how I did it?
I
took green food coloring and dripped it all over a postcard.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Of course,
we got there so late that I missed. Zachary was introducing it. I missed that. They had a little giveaway.
I got him to autograph a book. There were about three very good science fiction anthologies. With his name as editor on it. I don't know who really did the work.
Right.
And he was somewhere doing an appearance in makeup and the whole garb. And I got him to autograph my book. I think it was Zachary's Vulture Stew was the specific one.
I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember that. But anyway, we're still not getting around to the point is... 516-620-3602. That's really the point I'm trying to make.
But if you call right now, you can get...
Well, we do have a little Halloween item that might entice you.
It's not green. It's not easy being green. So we have instead something that is more seedy. It's a CD.
Actually, it's not. It's a DVD.
Ooh.
More to the point, it's two DVDs.
Okay, so that's like Blu-ray. That's like 8. No, Blu-ray is 16 gigs.
Well,
so it's 8. Something gigs.
Each DVD holds the equivalent of 12 MP3 discs.
Well, that depends on how you define an MP3 disc.
Well,
so each DVD holds 4.63 gigabytes.
Yeah, we're talking about old-time radio programs, mainly.
In the
MP3 format.
Yes. My God, that is
And we're
ton.
Talking over 1,000, maybe close to 2,000 shows. And what it's called...
And it sounds almost unbelievable, Max, but in fact...
What we call it is the Golden Age. Now, see, when you call this call center, they don't know from our programming at all.
Yeah.
I happen to do a program on Sunday evenings here on the station called The Golden Age of Radio that maybe you're not familiar with.
That happens to be on Saturday nights. No, Sunday.
Sunday nights.
Sunday nights. Right.
Sunday nights, 7 to 9.
7 to 9.
And
P.M.
And so we have assembled the...
Prime time.
The Golden Age Ultimate Horror Library. That's the name of it. And what it contains is... every known example in the digital format of every old-time radio program related to horror that I could find and could combine on these discs.
Mm-hmm.
So we have over 40 series.
And you're actually wearing your Forey Ackerman t-shirt.
Actually, someone bought this from Forey. This is an ongoing concern now.
Ah.
Yes, Famous Monsters of Filmland is back, boys and girls. I think out of
no
Pittsburgh.
No doubt. They're, yeah. Do they really own it, or do they just call themselves it without Forey around to contest?
I'll have to go dig. I have a copy of it out here. Yeah. You can look at it. And it's, you know, it's been
yeah, some people
for a
just
of years.
Decided to call themselves Omni Magazine.
No, they reprint from the original, this new Famous Monsters of Filmland. But that's not why we're here, my
That's
friend.
Not why we're here.
The Ultimate Horror Library. Every classic old-time radio horror stories, like Lights Out, that brought you the classic Chicken Heart story, which you will not find on this disc because there is no broadcast that survives of it. But you will get over 100 other Lights Out stories by Arch Obler. You will get Inner Sanctum, the famous creaking door. Raymond, your host. You get 70, there's two volumes, so you get 150 episodes of the Inner Sanctum. You get Quiet Please, the classic fantasy series by Willis Cooper. And not only do you get all of the American, there's a serialization of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde that's 52 weeks long.
Wow.
52 15-minute episodes. Two or three of them are missing, but it's about nearly all there.
Uh-huh.
There's a 13-part Frankenstein, 15-minute episodes.
That's not the BBC one.
No, this is the 30s.
Right.
It's rather creaky. You know, I mean, some of it is very rustic, shall we say, and, you know, antique-sounding, and others of it is quite, like The Quiet Please, quite modern-sounding.
Yeah.
But there's only over 40 episodes. There's a 1930s syndicated series called The Origins of Superstition, 39. 50,
oh, that sounds
50.
Like fun.
Yeah, oh, it is. The Black Cat, Salt Over Your Shoulder.
That one I know, yeah.
And 39 different ones that they did dramatizations about.
And all this for only...
Plus, you get South African shows.
That's right.
In South Africa, they did an imitation of the Inner Sanctum called The Creaking Door, of all things.
Yeah, they did some weird things. There was SF-67.
You got Australian programs.
Good eye.
You get Canadian programs. You get... And not just from the old-time radio era, but some of the Canadian stuff is from the 80s. So we're spanning the globe.
Is that when Judith Merrill was running some of the CBC programming?
Could be. One thing I can guarantee you is you will get no BBC programming.
Yes.
I swear on my life in front of a court.
And probably will have to if there is any, yes.
There is no BBC programming on this disc. Two discs, actually.
And two discs.
And you know, Jim...
With thousands of shows.
I was having, I don't know what possessed me when I set the price for this.
And that is the word for the day, possessed. All this for only...
Not what it should have been, $125.
Easily.
Not what it could have been, $100.
Without the Ginsu knives.
We priced this at $80.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I regret it to this day. Just think BAI probably could have gone to a retirement village by now if I had priced this
exactly.
a little higher.
So, if you donate $80 to WBAI to make a self-sustaining and prevent somebody else from just renting us, I think that's a good way. You know, keep the landlord from the door. Give a phone call now to area code 516-620-3602. Again, 516-620-3602.
And remember, it's called Golden Age. You have to make sure
you say, when you call them, you have to say Golden Age.
Ultimate Horror, and they call it Collection.
I'm about to reach Golden Age.
I called it Library. They called it Collection.
That reminds me, on Facebook, I suppose you saw, I'm supposed to tell you to stop off at Simon's.
Oh, I saw that. I liked it, too. Liked it.
Good.
Stop up at Simon's. He doesn't know my new schedule. I mean, when I used to when I used to leave here at 6 in the morning, I would sometimes stop by at 7,
right.
And he's up and writing and we're doing whatever he's doing. I would pound on the window.
Well, I mean, he saw that I wrote it was at midnight.
Yeah.
And by the way, we will be getting to an actual Samhain show at some point, but in order to justify that, we need
to get some business done.
That's right.
And we need to get some money in here so that we can then guiltlessly fritter away the remaining time.
I mean fritter, and we've got good frittering stuff.
Yep.
Because I do a lot of sound programming. If there is enough time, I will do a reading of Schottelbop. Do you
know
the story?
No, I do not.
It's a classic Theodore Sturgeon story.
Uh-huh.
It's a great Theodore Sturgeon story. And any old-time radio listener knows just how much Sturgeon had to offer in so many ways. And this is, I think, his best ghost story ever. Hmm. And it's a real Nyaka story. So, but that takes an hour. And in order to guiltlessly do that, we've got to get phone calls now at 516-620-3602. Now, how the bleep do I get the...
Well, you go to your favorite browser.
Yeah.
Firefox.
There is...
I'm sure it's up already.
It probably is.
We're going to look at the little screen and see.
There it is.
Shows us any pledges have come in. And
they have a really cool Google... Halloween logo. See?
Okay, that's clearly not the BAI pledge site.
No, let's see. But this is Firefox. That's the adjusted schedule. We don't need that. Facebook, Max Schmid. Okay.
Oh, I left all my stuff open.
Yes.
Oh, well, gee, we can close all of that
see.
Out.
Kathy O'Connell, Radio Listeners Forum. Come on.
516-620-3602. Let's get serious for just a moment here and support the radio station to which you are tuned, WBAI New York.
Okay, here's the listener count for online. You see, this is what I was telling you about Firefox. It locks up computers. It takes so much memory with all these add-ons. And then it has what they call memory leakage, which means that it consumes the computer's memory even after you close things.
You know what's even worse? OpenOffice really sucks.
It used to be good. Recently, it's had, the updates. You need an old copy of OpenOffice, then that will work.
Of these things want you to update all the time. I updated my Firefox today, and it stopped working.
Yes, well, exactly. Okay, here's the stream. We don't need that, but maybe... here we are.
There you go.
Here we are.
What time was the last pledge made?
12:25.
Oh, so someone actually called during our program.
And actually, it's 12:05, 12:18, 12:20, and 12:25.
Oh, it's all those leftover Gary Null. What was on before us?
No, it was Christine Blasdale.
Well, look, if you want to get super sexy, you can do that, too. I mean, no one's stopping you from ordering your Gary Null merchandise now.
Yeah, but...
Green stuff, $99 a bottle.
You know, I want people to
super
call
sexy.
In now for what we are doing. That's the power principle.
That might have been the last show.
I think it was.
It was on recently, yes.
Here's one, and this is just $25 to the transmitter fund. Thank you. Can I use it? Where do I see if I can say their name on the air?
Well, it's somewhere in the midsection, and sometimes it isn't there.
Yeah, so if it isn't there, I can just say thank you from White Plains. That I can say.
Okay.
I can
we'll
say,
allow that.
Thank you, person from White Plains. Here is somebody else, also for $50 to the transmitter fund. And see, I'm not seeing. Oh, here, may we thank? Yes, we can thank Thomas Howard on the air from Connecticut for his for donating $50. And then here's a more recent one from somebody in Flushing, New York. I suspect it should be Flushing.
Oh, yes.
But it's Flushing, New York. And can I use that person's name on the air?
See, sometimes it says and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah,
it's a
it
very
doesn't
strange system.
Say here.
I think it sometimes depends on whether they pledge online at give2wbai.org.
So somebody from Flushing, New York gave us $135.
Oh, super
for
sexy.
Super
sexy.
That's exactly correct.
Super sexy. Super sexy. So
we need your donations now.
Guess what's going to be the last show of the fund drive, by the way, Jim?
Oh, I know.
Super sexy, super sexy, super sexy.
Is it really?
Yes.
And then the first show after the fun drive will be either Sydney or Arpole.
No, no, no. It ends at 8 o'clock, I believe, tomorrow afternoon.
Oh, really? I saw a different schedule.
Well, the latest one, we will be back to regular programming with Chris D program, and You Don't Stop, the hip-hop program, followed by Mr. Smooth
at
10 o'clock. So,
Underground Railroad.
Yeah.
So this is your opportunity to say you like skiffy horror, science fiction, old-time radio, fantasy, supernatural, fun programming.
If you support fun on the radio.
Exactly.
516-620-3602.
And
let's not forget, you know, Mike Sargent and his brand of life is like science fiction on Monday at midnight. And who else? Who else dabbles in these realms?
Sydney.
Not much about Sydney.
Carrier
yes.
Wave, absolutely. Yeah, and with original fiction often, yes. Which is actually darned good.
If you can find it. What is it, 5 a.m.? 5 a.m. is on Saturday morning.
What a time slot.
And in the archives.
Who the bleep would want to be on the air at Saturday at 5 a.m.? Oh, that would be me! But the people who currently inhabit that time slot, when they went on there, said, "This is such a horrible time. Who would want to be on?" And I was sitting there crying, saying, "I would."
Yes.
It's been 3 years, almost to the day, since I was removed from that time slot.
Yes, but when your show has been reduced to an hour,
yeah.
It is a miserable time slot.
Well, absolutely, it is. No, to 7 was a great time slot.
Yeah.
5 to 6 sucks.
And when I once had a program that went from 4 to 6,
yeah,
you know, I mean, that's a pretty wretched time, five to six.
And that got cut by 120 minutes.
Yeah, it did. It did. 120 minutes removed.
Yeah.
But they did allow
out of the 2 hours, they cut out 120 minutes.
But they did allow me to alternate it with my other program.
There you go. Yeah, okay. But seriously, in order to make a statement that this is the kind of programming that you enjoy, that you want, and to make a statement for fun on WBAI, there's a concept, not to mention a self-sustaining WBAI, $80 will bring you this vastly underpriced 2 DVD sets.
Yes.
Each DVD is 4.63 gigs.
And the files could be anywhere from 32 thingamawatts to
K, probably.
Yeah, K. But they probably don't go much beyond 64. I don't think there's any. Actually, though, some of the
you probably have
some of the Canadian modern stuff are probably pretty nice.
I mean that's an amazing amount of stuff to fill. A movie fits on one DVD.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about 40 series, some of which have 100 or 150 episodes.
Yeah. So this for $80
You even get 4 episodes of Topper, the radio show.
Oh, God.
Topper on the radio.
Well, who was in that?
You know, I don't remember.
Wasn't Leo G. Carroll?
No. Oh, yeah.
Roland Young?
It might have been. I think it might have been.
It might have been that they would have taken from the movie. He did, what, 3 movies, I think, right?
3, or were there more?
There
were at least 3. I don't recall.
There was the original.
Topper Returns, and...
There's the one with Joan Blondell.
Topper Haunts a House. Topper Finds a Ghost.
As Topper meets Joan Blondell, basically.
Is that the one in the haunted house?
I think it is.
Yeah, I think that was the 3rd one.
It's not a very good one,
I love watching
Joan Blondell.
Yes. Well, anyone haunting a house. I'd like to see Abbott and Costello haunt a house.
Nah. I'll give them a pass.
Hold that ghost. Oh, great. Money's in my head. Said Moose.
But right now, we need the money in our coffers instead of in our head.
Oh, chick.
So we need your call. We need your pledge at area code 516-620-3602. I have a lot of material. I have a brand new, not just a brand new Steel Eye Span album, which is in and of itself enough to warrant, like, just tracking a whole album. But this particular album, are you familiar, Max, with Discworld?
Discworld.
Discworld.
I remember Ringworld.
No, this is...
And Ringworm, but...
No, that's for cats. No, this is Discworld. This is a series of 40-plus novels by Terry Pratchett, who's pretty much a British institution. And some of the funniest and sometimes most touching books.
Is that a concept album? Is that what you're trying to say?
It is a concept album. Ooh. What it is, it's actually it's based on a novel by Terry Pratchett called Wintersmith, which is one of my favorite Pratchett novels. Pratchett is usually over the top. They've made three movies of the Discworld series so far. The first one starring Sean Astin. And, what's
his name? Discworld in the title of any of these?
No.
Oh, well, that's...
No, they're all set in the Discworld universe. They all open up showing you the Discworld, which is a flat world on the back of four elephants, which in turn are standing on a giant turtle floating through space. And where that turtle is going is unknown. But the Wizards of the Unseen University, headed by Tim Curry, usually know. I mean, it's funny, funny stuff. But Pratchett, who is in a sad way right now, by the way, he's not that much older than you or I, but he has early onset Alzheimer's disease. Ooh. It's really nasty. And he's been knighted. This is now Sir Terry Pratchett, because he is pretty much a British institution. And he has a series of four books, all cover a young girl from she's about 7 or 8 years old, Tiffany Aching, till the wee free men, which refers to the MacFeagles, who are small gnome-like creatures that wreak havoc upon everything, and they drag her to the land of fairy, and she's involved with the fairy queen and all that. And then by the third book, called Wintersmith, she is she has accidentally entered not just a Morris dance, but what's called the Dark Morris. And in that, she has attracted unwittingly the spirit of winter, who will now not leave. He wants her. He is going after her.
And this is the theme of the Steel Ice Band record?
This is the story of this album. It's their first concept album, maybe their 40th album, but their first concept album, and it's maybe Pratchett's 40th novel. There's one book after that, which is slightly covered in this album. The fourth book, which is maybe my favorite Pratchett book, which is saying a lot, is I Shall Wear Midnight, or I Will Wear Midnight. And Pratchett is so funny and such a good read that at a panel I once moderated at a convention, David Hartwell said that it is a proven scientific fact that reading Terry Pratchett will lower your cholesterol level.
See, another health tip from WBAI.
There you go.
And that's why you should call 516-620-3602.
And this album came out today, and I've got it.
Today or tomorrow?
One of those. I got early notification of it, and I got from...
Are you allowed to play it before its release? You certainly hope so.
I certainly hope so. I was sent a newsletter by a member of Steel Ice Band who informed of its availability early, and I purchased it.
Yeah. And you'll hear it...
And we can.
If you play.
We will hear. Exactly. And, you know, depending on. Tell me that I left the short story at home. I left the short story at home.
Which short story was that?
Shuttlebop. Theodore Sturgeon, yeah.
It's not online. You can't Google it.
I actually. I think I have ways of acquiring it.
Yeah.
I have to get my tablet out.
Ah.
But there it is. So I can read that, but it would also be fun to play the Steel I Span album and do my usual Danny Elfman and all kind Rocky Horror and usual Samhain spectacular mix. But how much of that we can do? It's midnight. It's the pitching hour. Yeah. Come midnight.
The wee pitching hour.
The wee pitching hour. We may have to take a break for the wee. But regardless of that, yeah. I mean, we have like 8 minutes left in the pitching hour.
Yes. And then I have dinner waiting for me.
Yes.
On my strange schedule.
Amazing.
So I need to fly on out of here in a couple of minutes.
Somebody is actually cooking Max a dinner at this hour.
And not too happy that I stuck around for an extra hour this evening.
Tell her I owe her.
And you do.
I do.
In the meantime, though,
516-620-3602.
Remember, our offering this evening, I mean, you can get any premium you've heard about or can find on the website give2wbai.org. That's give numeral two.
Okay, now here's somebody who pledged, and I know for a fact that they misspelled Benzool.
Oh, yes, I know. I had some that I noticed, you know, people who pledge regularly.
This is a guy who used to volunteer here. He now lives in Maryland. And his name is spelled Z-U-H-L.
How do they have it? Z-O-O-L?
They have... No, that would be if they were watching Ghostbusters.
Okay.
They have Z-U-H-O-L.
Oh, so it rhymes with ghoul.
Yes. Exactly. And, dear.
No, okay. I had a listener, and they got the first... They got her second initial wrong.
And I just saw that he would... Well... We won't go into that, but thank you for pledging. And here's another $80 pledge. That's two $80 pledges.
If you want to make sure your name is spelled correctly, however, you can do it online at give2wbai.org.
We can definitely thank William Mathis on the air. And by the way, to that previous pledger, let me say I'm so sorry I did not go to Capclave, but I was unable to. That's in Washington, D.C., where I was going to do a show with George Martin.
And what happened?
A family commitment came up the same weekend, and I will do George Martin through Skype. But it would have been nice to have had... He was on this show, maybe 35 years ago, live in the studio. He used to live in Jersey City, or Hoboken, or some suburb like that.
Unfortunately, that was all destroyed by the Martian landers recently.
Yes. So I was all set to go to Washington, D.C. and have fun at that. But it's the second year in a row. Last year I couldn't go because of Sandy.
Sandy kept me at home. Many things.
Yes. And then this year it was something else. But, you know, this is a nice small convention, and yet they got George Martin, who is at this point probably one of the biggest names, biggest recognized names in science fiction, not counting Tolkien at this point worldwide, wouldn't you say? Even you must know who George Martin is.
Is that George R.R. Martin?
That's the one, Railroad. Oh, okay. George Railroad Martin.
Yes. Well, see, once you say it
We used to call him Railroad. He used to be called Railroad. I don't know that he ever liked it, but he was called Railroad when he lived around here. Yeah, George R.R. Martin.
A short line.
And a very nice person, by the way. Personally, by the way, I cannot read or watch Game of Thrones. I like his science fiction. I prefer Wild Cards and...
I must say, I have never seen Game of Thrones either. Even though I pay for that stupid channel.
You'd probably like it, knowing your taste.
Yes.
There are enough, you know, eye gougings and decapitations during oral sex and stuff to make you happy.
Yes, it's happened to me more than once as well.
Has it really? Okay, we have to segue in that case. Roland the Headless Thompson Gunner. But... Max really has to go in about 3 minutes, so we'd like to get a few more of them $80 pledges at 516-620-3602. $80 will bring you two DVDs of MP3s, all these TLAs.
And these are chock full, by the way. I mean, there isn't a digit to spare on either one of these. I actually had to cut. You know, I had to go through. There were a couple of series. There was a 1965 series from ABC called Theater 5. It was on 5 days a week at 5 o'clock on ABC in 1965.
So we're actually,
and I had to go through the list and cut out the science fiction stories to leave the to trim it down a little bit.
We're actually talking about over 8 gigs of MP3s. That's a lot of audio. This program, when archived, 3 hours long, will come to approximately 50 megabytes. Okay. You know, then 1,000 megabytes is a gigabyte. And Max has 2 DVDs. That's over 9 gigabytes of audio. That's a lot of audio. And also...
And to the best of my knowledge...
That's mono, most of it, right?
Yes. To the best of my knowledge, it is every old-time radio horror program that exists that I could find included here.
And Max's knowledge on this stuff is exhaustive.
I went online. I went through several sets that I had acquired over the years. Some of it is my own work.
And here's another pledge just coming in. But it's for the... even now, at this
super
hour,
sexy,
it's for
super sexy.
Super sexy.
Super sexy.
Super sexy. Super sexy. Super sexy. Super sexy. Woo, woo!
And, you know, who better than Christine Blaisdell and Gary Null to present something known as Super Sexy? Yes. It's just the mind boggles.
I have not met Christine Blaisdell or seen photos.
They're hard to come by the way, photos, but they... My point
Gary
is...
Gary Null, I used to engineer, so...
Well, here's the thing, though.
God knows.
This is largely a cookbook, plus 5 DVDs. So, I mean, for $135, it's quite a package.
Yeah.
As is the Reboot Your Brain package, which is, I think, maybe $150. But, you know, I mean, the Gary Null premiums in this current drive are quite substantial, including multiple DVDs and a book. So, you know, if you have any doubt, or you are doing your Christmas and Hanukkah shopping early this year, go to the BAI website, give to WBAI. That's give
number
two. WBAI.org. And just browse through our online store. Now, if you want to see everything we're offering from the golden age of radio, you can type golden in, and it will bring up everything, but for some reason, the horror library, which you have to type horror into the search box to find. But, you know, I've got a new Gene Shepherd package that's available. I've got
Army Gene Shepherd, right?
Well, yeah. No, unfortunately, all the books are gone, so you can get now are the MP3 discs. But if you want an audio book that's reverse engineered from the book that was transcribed from Gene Shepherd radio shows, basically I took the book and worked backwards to put together the audio book for Shepherd's Army.
Yeah.
So that's available for a $75 pledge. I have a cheap one called On Stage with Kathy and Elliot Lewis. That's 42, just dramatic anthology, a series with the finest actors and writers in radio in 1953. $30. 25 of that makes you a member, and the extra 5 goes to give you a little gift, little add-on gift.
And most importantly, it all goes to make WBAI self-sustaining.
That's correct.
Which is the goal here. And without that goal, without that happening, well, I think it's easy to say nasty things are going to happen. We need your pledge. We need your support. As we say always, but this time we mean it even more, now more than ever. Area code 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602. We crave your pledge. Please call in now. Make that pledge and support WBAI, science fiction programming, golden age of radio programming, fun.
The arts.
Entertainment. The arts. Exactly.
part of what WBAI used to feature a hell of a lot more of.
Yes, exactly. Because in the so-called golden days of WBAI, we were doing so many free music stores, so many radio dramas,
Speaking of readings, you know,
which people can actually now find on at archive.org.
Thanks to a grant from the Grammy organization, the Pacifica Radio Archives digitized a whole bunch of free music stores and old... not the radio. What was it? The Baird Searles?
The 99.5 Radio Theater and the Mind's Eye Theater.
Yeah, so search for WBAI Archives or Pacifica Archives at the place called archive.org, and you'll find a whole lot of just uploaded ancient stuff from WBAI.
As of like 2 days ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, and all of this, you know, again, thanks to the unique entity that is WBAI. And it will only continue to be around if you call and if you pledge 516-620-3602, pledge $80, and get one heck of a thank you gift.
Well, Jim, I must say thank you, yes,
okay,
because
so...
I think there's a bus at 12 after that if I run like hell, I might make.
Okay, so
which is probably my last chance of getting home before 3 a.m.
Okay, so let me tune down this CD, because this CD is yours. Whoops! Well, that was you.
Yes, that's our wonderful.
I thought that was a piece of music from somewhere. Yeah. Okay. So I press stop there. I press this here. My God, it works like a CD player would work. So there you go. I have my own materials that I can stream in the background while I am talking. But it is 103, so yeah, you're gonna have to move. Thank you, Max.
I gotta shut everything down over here.
Oh dear. Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you again.
All right. Good night, gang.
Good night, and all the little kitties. Okay, so this is Spirit Watch, as Max has named it, over WBAI in New York City, listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio, for the moment, at 99.5 FM. And we're not going to pitch all night. We have told you many of the reasons, and I think there is little left to do now other than to please, please, please just make that happen. Make that call. Make that pledge to area code 516-620-3602. Sorry if I'm off mic. I am trying to operate this computer so I can bring up some of that music that I brought in the background. I'm so upset that I left that story at home. But, you know, this is, geez, Max, I think what I've got here is exactly the same album that you were just playing. Yeah, Haunted House 20 tracks to make you jump. So guess what? Yes, it turns out that is the same one. All this 20 stuff. Here's some other material that should curdle stuff. Let's see. Is it going to come up properly? I see somebody switched players here. Did they? Let's bring this up. There we go. Oh, no. This is too... I'm not... No. That's just too... Too 1950s for me. It's got to be earlier than that for me to be happy with the material. But there are a number of things that we constantly play. Oh, here's one from Max, the MST3K theme. Halloween Stomp. Ah, well, here we go. Let's start with Mysterious Moe's. You know this melody. Everybody does who's ever watched a cartoon in their lives.
There's a man of mystery that's roaming through the land. Far and near you hear of him, he's found on every hand. Every city, town, and village knows of him by now. There's a way to recognize him, let me tell you how. Now if your path at midnight dark by a graveyard goes and someone whistles, why that's Mysterious Bose. Or on some dark and stormy night while the tempest blows, if someone whistles, that's Mysterious Mose. He sees all, knows all, he gets in everywhere. Now some night, he might wait for you upon the stairs. So when you're going down the cellar, walk upon your toes. And if someone whistles, that's Mysterious Mose. From the sleep by the peep, peep, peep of a flute from down below. If someone whistles, why that's Mysterious Mose. Now if at dawn of an early morn a trumpet softly blows, if someone whistles, that's Mysterious Mose. He sees all, knows all, perhaps a clarinet or a bass horn or anything that he can get. He plays on every instrument, but there's just one tune he knows. When someone whistles, that's Mysterious Mose.
Classic, classic sounds. Great song, Mysterious Mose. Well, I have actually found a copy of Shottlebop. And I can do that reading for you. I can also play a portion. In fact, I think I will cue up a tune or two from Wintersmith by Steel Eye Span. I pretty much promised online that I would. Now, let's see. Oh, did I close? Nah, hold on. There's so many browsers open here on this bleeping computer, which is one of the reasons why it runs so slow. And, here we are. Here we are. I have not yet gotten rid of it. So, let me go here to some choices. Here we are. My library. I don't want anybody else's. I want my library. And then albums. Boy, this computer is so slow. So I apologize for my just mumbling here on the air. Maybe what I should do is play you another song while I cue stuff up. Hell's Bells is a good one. There's a Betty Boop cartoon based on that. So why don't we go there, and I'll be back shortly. That's assuming that the song starts. Quite an assumption. Ah, here we go. Thank you.
hearken to hereafter. All is forsaken when toll is taken. Hell's bells ringing in my ears. It's certainly hot, the rhythm just swells. Now somebody's got a hold of those bells. They're starting to ring, they're starting to sing, and somebody yells, it must be hell's bells.
These are the ways, all the ways. Halloween, and the fairy folk cry, those that would white steed and pull the rider down. For I'll ride on the white steed nearest to the town. For I was an earthly knight, they give me that renown. Oh, they will turn me in your arms to a newt or a snake, but hold me tight.
Alison girls, she must be the ugliest witch in show me a car with the good red gold. Well set, the jewels are fair to see. Says if you will be my love is so true, this goodly gift I would give to thee. Away, away, you ugly witch, go far away and let me be. I never would kiss your ugly mouth for all of the gifts that you could give. Madison knows she must be the ugliest witch in the North Country. Madison knows she must be the ugliest witch in the North Country. She's turned her mind and round about, and thrice she blew on a grass green horn. She saw by the moon and the stars up above that she'd make me rue the day I was born. Then out she has taken a silver wand, she's turned her three times round and round. She's muttered such words till my strength it did fail, and she's turned me into an ugly worm.
Thank you.
Indeed, it's the hour of the wolf, and I don't want to die. Oingo Boingo with Danny Elfman. And, oh, before that, The We Free Men, also the title of a book by Terry Pratchett in the Tiffany Aching series, the third book of which is Wintersmith, which is the name of the Steel I Span album. Before that, another Steel I Span song, Alison Gross. Before that, Tam Lin, a classic All Hallows Eve song. The Dark Morris song, again, Steel I Span. What a surprise. And from the album Wintersmith. And let's see, I have to go to a different player. Ah, yes, Hell's Bells, Don Redman's orchestra, as also seen in a classic Betty Boop cartoon. This is Hour of the Wolf, and I Don't Want to Die. Over WBAI in New York City, which doesn't want to die either, a listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio broadcasting at 99.5 FM and over WBAI.org. And it's not too late to pledge. You can pledge right up to 3 o'clock and get, as Max said, it's literally thousands of programs of horror radio from the inception of radio to the present. Everything except the BBC for $80 on two DVDs containing just MP3s. And if you know about that technology, you know that is volumes upon volumes of radio drama. And you can get that by supporting WBAI and calling area code 516-620-3602. But this is our Samhain Spectacular. And by the way, I would like to thank Robert Knight for making the airtime available. And I would like to thank Berthold Reimers for enabling us to schedule this special program tonight. Now, here is a short story. I had it printed out at home. I had it all ready to go, and then I left it at home. But through the miracle of technology, and thanks to my ability to finally get through to the Wi-Fi here at City College, and get into my Dropbox, I miraculously had the foresight to put this short story, it's a long short story, by the way, onto a tablet, which I thankfully brought with me. And this is going to take about an hour, but it's a classic. And it's, I think, a perfect Halloween story. Sometimes when we do Samhain on this program, we do the actual Halloween scary stuff. We do a lot of the fairy stuff because it is, after all, a pagan holiday. But occasionally, just occasionally, without going into the gore, without going into the camp of the spirit, it is right just to find a really, really fun, good ghost story. And Theodore Sturgeon wrote one of the best. It is called Shottlebop. I'd never seen the place before, and I lived just down the block around the corner. I'll even give you the address, if you like. The Shottlebop, between 20th and 21st Streets on 10th Avenue in New York City. You can find it if you go there looking for it. Might even be worth your while, too. But you'd better not. The Shottlebop. It got me. It was a small shop with a weather-beaten sign swung from a wrought crane, creaking dismally in the late fall wind. I walked past it, thinking of the engagement ring in my pocket and how it had just been handed back to me by Audrey. And my mind was far removed from such things as shottlebops. I was thinking that Audrey might have used a gentler term than useless in describing me, and her neatly turned remark about my being a constitutional psychopathic incompetent was as uncalled for as it was spectacular. She must have read it somewhere, balanced as it was by, "And I wouldn't marry you if you were the last man on earth," which is a notably worn cliche. "Shottlebop," I muttered, and then paused, wondering where I had picked up such oddly rhythmic syllables with which to express myself. I had seen it on that sign, of course, and it caught my eye. "And what?" I asked myself, "might be a shottlebop." "Myself," replied promptly, "dunno. Toddle back and have a look." So toddle I did back along the east side of 10th, wondering what manner of man might be running such an establishment in pursuance of what kind of a business. I was enlightened on the second point by a sign in the window, all but obscured by the dust and ashes of apparent centuries, which read, "We sell bottles." There was another line of smaller print there. I rubbed at the crusted glass with my sleeve and finally was able to make out, "with things in them." Just like that. "We sell bottles with things in them." Well, of course I went in. Sometimes very delightful things come in bottles. And the way I was feeling, I could stand a little delighting. "Close it!" shrilled a voice as I pushed through the door. The voice came from a shimmering egg adrift in the air behind the counter low down. Peering over, I saw that it was not an egg at all, but the bald pate of an old man who was clutching the edge of the counter, his scrawny body streaming away in the slight draft from the open door as if he were made of bubbles. A mite startled, I kicked the door with my heel. He immediately fell on his face and then scrambled, smiling, to his feet. "It's so good to see you again," he rasped. I think his vocal cords were dusty, too. Everything else was. As the door swung to, I felt as if I was inside a great dusty brain that had just closed its eyes. Oh, yeah, that was light enough. But it wasn't the lamplight, and it wasn't daylight. It was like light reflected from the cheeks of pale people. Can't say I enjoyed it much. "What do you mean, again?" I said irritably. "You never saw me before." I saw you when you came in, and I fell down and got up and saw you again, he quibbled and beamed. What can I foo for do? Huh? I hawed, and then I translated it to, what can I do for you? Oh, I said, well, I saw your sign. What have you got in a bottle that I might like? What do you want? What have you got? He broke into a piping chant. I remember it yet, word for word. For half a buck, a vial of luck, or a bottle of nifty breaks, or a flask of joy, or Myrna Loy, for luncheon with sirloin steaks. Pour out a mug from this old jug, and you'll never get wet in rains. I've bottles of grins and wet racetrack wins, and lotions to ease your pains. Here's bottles of imps and wet-pack shrimps from a sea unknown to man, and an elixir to banish fear and the sap from the pipes of Pan. With a powdered horn of a unicorn, you can win yourself a mate with the rich hobnob, or get a job. It's yours at a lowered rate. Now wait right there, I snarled. You mean you actually sell dragon's blood and ink from the pen of Friar Bacon and all that mumbo-jum? He nodded rapidly and smiled all over his improbable face. I went on, the genuine article? He kept on nodding. I regarded him for a moment. You mean to stand there with your teeth in your mouth and your bare face hanging out and tell me in this day and age, in this city and in broad daylight, you sell such trash and then expect me, an enlightened intellectual? You are very stupid and twice as bombastic, he said quietly. I glowered at him and reached for the doorknob, and there I froze. I mean froze, for the old man whipped out an ancient bulb-like atomizer and squeezed a couple of whiffs at me as I turned away, and so help me, I couldn't move. Well, I could cuss, though, and boy, did I. The proprietor hopped over the counter and ran over to me. He must have been standing on a box back there, for now I could see that he was barely 3 feet tall. He grabbed my coattails, ran up my back, slid down my arm, which was extended doorward. He sat down on my wrist and swung his feet and laughed up at me. As far as I could feel, he weighed absolutely nothing. When I had run out of profanity, I pride myself on never repeating a phrase of invective, he said, "Does that prove anything to you, my cocky and unintelligent friend? That was the essential oil from the hair of the Gorgon's head, and until I give you an antidote, you'll stand there from now till a week from text Newsday." "Get me out of this," I roared, "or I smack you so hard you lose your brains through the pores in your feet." He giggled. I tried to tear loose and couldn't. It was as if all my epidermis had turned to high-carbon steel. I began cussing again, but quit in despair. "You think altogether too much of yourself," said the proprietor of the Shuttlebop. "Look at you. Why, I wouldn't hire you to wash my windows. You expect to marry a girl who is accustomed to the least of animal comfort, and then you get miffed because she turns you down. Why does she turn you down? Because you won't get a job. You're a no-good. You're a bum. And you have the nerve to walk around telling people where to get off. Now, if I were in your position, I would ask politely to be released. Then I would see if anyone in this shop would be good enough to sell you a bottle full of something that might help out. Now, I never apologize to anybody, and I never back down, and I never take any guff from mere tradesmen. But this was different. I'd never been petrified before, nor had my nose rubbed in so many gaffing truths. I relented. Okay, let me break away, then I'll buy something. Your tone is sullen, he said complacently, dropping lightly to the floor and holding his atomizer at the ready. You will have to say please, pretty please. He went back of the counter and returned with a paper of powder which he had me sniff, In a couple of seconds, I began to sweat. My limbs lost their rigidity so quickly that it almost threw me. I'd have been flat on my back if the man hadn't caught me and solicitously led me to a chair. As strength dribbled back into my shocked tissues, it occurred to me that I might like to flatten this hobgoblin for pulling a trick like that. But a strange something stopped me. Strange, because I'd never had the experience before. It was simply the idea that once I got outside, I would agree with him for having such a low opinion of me. He wasn't worrying. Rubbing his hands briskly, he turned to his shelves. Now, let's see. What would be best for you, I wonder? Success is something you couldn't justify. Money? You don't know how to spend it. A good job? You're not fitted for one. He turned gentle eyes on me and shook his head. A sad case. Tsk, tsk. I crawled. A perfect mate? You're too stupid to recognize perfection, too conceited to appreciate. I don't think that I can... Wait! He whipped 4 or 5 bottles and jars off the dozens of shelves behind him and disappeared somewhere in the dark recesses of the store. Immediately there came sounds of violent activity, clinkings and little crashes, stirrings, and then the rapid, susurrant grating of a mortar and pestle, then the slushy sound of liquid being added to a dry ingredient during stirring, and at length, after quite a silence, the glugging of a bottle being filled through a filtering funnel. The proprietor reappeared triumphantly, bearing a 4-ounce bottle without a label. "This will do it," he beamed. "This will do what?" "Why, cure you." "Cure?" My pompous attitude, as Audrey had called it, had returned while he was mixing. "What do you mean, cure? I haven't gotten anything." "My dear little boy," he said offensively, "you most certainly have. Are you happy? Have you ever been happy? No. Well, I'm going to fix all of that up. That is, I will give you the start that you need. Like any other cure, it requires your cooperation. You're in a bad way, young fella. You have what is known in the profession as retrogressive metempsychosis of the ego in its most malignant form. You are a constitutional unemployable, a downright sociophagus. I don't like you. Nobody does." Feeling a little bit on the receiving end of a blitz, I stammered, "Well, what do you aim to do?" He extended the bottle. "Go home. Get into a room by yourself. The smaller, the better. Drink this down, right out of the bottle. Stand by for developments. That's all. But what will it do to me?" "It will do nothing to you. It will do a great deal for you. It can do as much for you as you want it to. But mind me now. As long as you use what it gives you for your self-improvement, you will thrive. Use it for self-glorification, as a basis for boasting, or for revenge, and you will suffer in the extreme. Now remember that." "But what is it? How?" "I am selling you a talent. You have none now. When you discover what kind of a talent it is, it will be up to you to use it to your advantage. Now, go away. I still don't like you." What do I owe you?" I muttered, completely snowed under by this time. "The bottle carries its own price. You won't pay anything unless you fail to follow my directions. Now, will you go, or must I uncork a bottle of gin? And I don't mean London Dry." "I'll go," I said. I had seen something swirling in the depths of a 10-gallon carboy at one end of the counter, and I didn't like it one bit. "Goodbye." "Good guy," he returned. I went out, and I headed down 10th Avenue, and I turned east up 20th Street, and I never looked back. And for many reasons now, I wish that I had, for there was, without doubt, something very strange about that shuttle bop. I didn't simmer down until I got home, but once I had a cup of black Italian coffee under my belt, I felt better. I was skeptical about it at first. I was actually inclined to scoff, but somehow I didn't want to scoff too loudly. I looked at the bottle a little scornfully, and there was a little certain something about the glass of it that seemed to be staring back at me. I sniffed and threw it up behind some old hats on top of the closet, then sat down to unlax. I used to love to unlax. I'd put my feet on the doorknobs and slide down in the upholstery until I was sitting on my shoulder blades, and as the old saying has it, sometimes I sets and thinks, and sometimes I just sets. The former is easy enough, and is what even an accomplished loafer has to go through before he reaches the latter and more blissful state. It takes years of practice to relax sufficiently to be able to just set. I had learned it years ago. But just as I was about to slip into the vegetable status, I was annoyed by something. I tried to ignore it. I manifested a superhuman display of lack of curiosity, but the annoyance persisted. A light pressure on my elbow where it draped over the arm of the chair. I was put in the unpleasant predicament of having to concentrate on what it was, and realizing that concentration on anything was the least desirable thing there could be. I gave up finally, and with a deep sigh opened my eyes and had a look. It was the bottle. I screwed up my eyes and then looked again, but it was still there. The closet door was open as I had left it, and its shelf almost directly above me. Must have fallen out. Feeling that if the damn thing were on the floor, it couldn't fall any farther, I shoved it off the arm of the chair with my elbow. It bounced. It bounced with such astonishing accuracy that it wound up in exactly the same spot it had started from, on the arm of the easy chair by my elbow. Startled, I shoved it violently. This time I pushed it hard enough to send it against the wall, from which it rebounded to the shelf under my small table, and thence back to the chair arm, and this time it perched cozily against my shoulder. Jarred by the bouncing, the stopper hopped out of the bottle mouth and rolled into my lap, and there I sat, breathing the bitter sweet fumes of its contents, feeling frightened and silly as hell. I grabbed the bottle and sniffed. I smelled that somewhere before. Where was it? Oh, yeah, that mascara the Chinese honky-tonk girls use in Frisco. The liquid was dark, smoky black. I tasted it cautiously. It wasn't bad. If it wasn't alcoholic, then the old man in the shop had found a darn good substitute for alcohol. At the second sip, I liked it, and at the third, I really enjoyed it, and there wasn't any fourth because by then, the little bottle was a dead marine. That was about the time I remembered the name of the black ingredient with a funny smell. Kohl, K-O-H-L. It is an herb the Orientals use to make it possible to see supernatural beings. It's a silly superstition. And then the liquid I just put away, lying warm and comfortable in my stomach, began to fizz. Then, I think it began to swell. I tried to get up, and couldn't. The room seemed to come apart and throw itself at me piecemeal, and I passed out. Don't you ever wake up the way I did. For your own sake, be careful about things like that. Don't swim up out of a sodden sleep and look about you and see all those things fluttering and drifting and flying and creeping and crawling around you. Puffy things dripping blood and filmy legless creatures and little bits and snatches of pasty human anatomy. It was awful. There was a human hand afloat in the air an inch away from my nose, and at my startled gasp it drifted away from me, fingers fluttering in the disturbed air from my breath. Something veined and bulbous popped out from under my chair and rolled across the floor. I heard a faint clicking and looked up into a gnashing set of jaws without any face attached. I think I broke down and cried a little. I know I passed out again. The next time I awoke, must have been hours later because it was broad daylight and my clock and watch had both stopped, things were a little better. Oh, yeah, there were a few of the horrors around, but somehow they didn't bother me much now. I was practically convinced that I was nuts. Now that I had the conviction, why worry about it? I don't know. It must have been one of the ingredients in the bottle that had calmed me down so. I was curious and excited, and that's about all. I looked around, and I was almost pleased. The walls were green. The drab wallpaper had turned to something breathtakingly beautiful. They were covered with what seemed to be moss, but never moss like that grew for human eyes to see before. It was long and thick, and it had a slight perpetual movement, not that of a breeze, but of growth. Fascinated, I moved over and looked carefully. Growing indeed with all the quick magic of spore and cyst and root and growth again to spore, and the swift magic of it was only a part of the magical whole, for never was there such a green. I put out my hand to touch it and stroke it, but I only felt the wallpaper. But when I closed my fingers on it, I could feel that light touch of it in the palm of my hand, the weight of 20 sunbeams, the soft resilience of jet darkness in a closed place. The sensation was a delicate ecstasy, and never had I been happier than I was at that moment. Around the baseboards were little snowy toadstools, and the floor was grassy. Up the hinged side of the closet door climbed a mass of flowering vines, and their petals were hued in tones indescribable. I felt as if I had been blind until now, and deaf too, for now I could hear the whispering of scarlet, gauzy insects among the leaves and the constant murmur of growth. All around me was a new and a lovely world, so delicate that the wind of my movements tore petals from the flowers, so real and natural that it defied its own impossibility. Awestruck, I turned and turned, running from wall to wall, looking under my old furniture, into my old books, and everywhere I looked I found newer and more beautiful things to wonder at. It was while I was flat on my stomach, looking up at the bedsprings, where a colony of jewel-like lizards had nested, that I first heard the sobbing. It was young and plaintive, and had no right to be in my room where everything was so happy. I stood and looked around, and there in the corner crouched the translucent figure of a little girl. She was leaning back against the wall. Her thin legs were crossed in front of her, and she held the leg of a tattered toy elephant dejectedly in one hand and cried into the other. Her hair was long and dark. It poured and tumbled over her face and shoulders. I said, "What's the matter, kiddo?" I hate to hear a child cry like that. She cut herself off in the middle of a sob and shook the hair out of her eyes, looking up and past me, all fright and olive skin and big, filled, violet eyes. "Oh!" she squeaked. I repeated, "What is the matter? Why are you crying?" She hugged the elephant to her breast defensively and whimpered, "Where are you?" Surprised, I said, "Right here in front of you, child. Can't you see me?" She shook her head. "I'm scared. Who are you?" "I am not going to hurt you. I heard you crying and I wanted to see if I could help you. Can't you see me at all?" "No," she whispered. "Are you an angel?" "Like a fawn, by no means." I stepped closer and put my hand on her shoulder. The hand went right through her, and she winced and shrank away, uttering a little wordless cry. "I'm sorry," I said quickly. "I didn't mean you can't see me at all. I can see you." She shook her head again. "I think you're a ghost," she said.
Do tell.
"And what are you?"
"I'm Ginny," she said. "I have to stay here, and I have no one to play with."
She blinked and there was a suspicion of further tears. "Where did you come from?" I asked. "I came here with my mother. We lived in lots of other rooming houses. Mother cleaned floors in office buildings, but this is where I got so sick. I was sick a long time. Then one day I got off the bed and came over here, and when I looked back, I was still on the bed. It was awful funny. Some men came and put the me that was on the bed into a stretcher thing and took it, me, out. After a while, Mummy left too. She cried for a long time before she left, and when I called to her, she couldn't hear me. She never came back, and I just got to stay here. Why? I got to. I don't know why. I just got to. What do you do here? I just stay here and think about things. Once a lady lived here, had a little girl just like me, and we used to play together until the lady watched us one day. She carried on something awful. She said her little girl was possessed. The girl kept calling me, "Ginny, Ginny, tell Mama you're here," and I tried, but the lady couldn't see me. Then the lady got scared, and she picked up her little girl and cried, and I was sorry, and I ran over here, and I hid, and after a while, the other little girl forgot about me, I guess. They moved, she said, with pathetic finality. I was touched. "What will become of you, Ginny?" "I don't know," she said, and her voice was troubled. "I guess I'll just stay here and wait for Mummy to come back. I've been here a long time. I guess I deserve it, too. Why, child?" She looked guiltily at her shoes. "I couldn't stand feeling so awful bad when I was sick. I got up out of bed before it was time. I should have stayed where I was, and this is what I get for quitting. But Mommy will be back, just you see."
"Yeah, sure she will," I muttered. My throat felt tight. "You take it easy, kid. Any time you want someone to talk to, you just pipe up. I'll talk to you any time that I'm around."
She smiled, and it was a pretty thing to see. What a raw deal for a kid. I grabbed my hat and went out. Outside, things were the same as in the room to me. The hallways, the dusty stair carpets wore new garments of brilliant, nearly intangible foliage. They were no longer dark, for each leaf had its own pale and different light. Once in a while, I saw things not so pretty. There was a giggling thing that scuttled back and forth in the third floor landing. It was a little indistinct, but it looked like a great deal like Barrelhead Brogan, a shanty Irish bum who had returned from a warehouse robbery a year or so ago, only to shoot himself accidentally. With his own gun, I was not sorry. Down on the first floor, on the bottom step, I saw two youngsters sitting. The girl had her head on the boy's shoulder, and he had his arms around her, and I could see the banister through them. I stopped to listen. Their voices were faint and seemed to come from a long way away. He said,
"There's one way out."
She said,
"Don't talk that way, Tommy.
What else can we do? I've loved you for 3 years, and we still can't get married. No money, no hope, no nothing. Sue, if we did do it, I just know that we would always be together, always and always." After a long time, she said,
"All right, Tommy, you get a gun, just like you said."
She suddenly pulled him even closer.
"Tommy, are you sure that we'll always be together just like this?"
"Always," he whispered and kissed her.
"Just like this."
Then there was a long silence while neither moved. Suddenly they were as I had first seen them, and he said,
"There's only one way out."
And she said,
"Don't talk that way, Tommy."
And he said,
"What else can we do? I've loved you for 3 years.
It went on like that, over and over and over. I felt lousy. I went on out into the street. It began to filter through to me what had happened. The man in the shop had called it a talent. I couldn't be crazy, could I? I didn't feel crazy. The draft from the bottle had opened my eyes on a new world. What was this world? It was a thing peopled by ghosts. There they were, storybook ghosts and regular haunts and poor damn souls. All the fixings of a storied supernatural, all the things we have heard about and loudly disbelieve and secretly wonder about. And so what? What did it have to do with me? As the days slid by, I wondered less about my new strange surroundings and gave more and more thought to that question. I had bought, or been given, a talent. I could see ghosts. I could see all parts of a ghostly world, even the vegetation that grew in it. That was perfectly reasonable. The trees and birds and fungi and flowers. A ghost world is a world as we know it. And as a world, we know it must have vegetation. Yes, I could see them. But they couldn't see me. Okay, what could I get out of it? I couldn't talk about it or write about it because I wouldn't be believed. And besides, I had this thing exclusive as far as I knew. Why cut a lot of other people in on it? On what, though? No. Unless I could get a steer from somewhere, there was no percentage in it for me that I could see. And then, about 6 days later, after I took that eye-opener, I remembered the one place where I might get the steer. The Shuttlebop. I was on 6th Avenue at the time, trying to find something in a five and dime that Ginny might like. She couldn't touch anything I brought her, but she enjoyed things she could look at, picture books and stuff. By getting her a little book of photographs of trains since the DeWitt Clinton and asking her which of them were the ones she had seen, I found out approximately how long it had been since she had been there. Nearly 18 years. Anyway, I got my bright idea and headed over for 10th Avenue and the Shuttlebop. I'd ask that old man. He'd tell me. At the corner of 9th Avenue, I bumped into Happy Sam Healy and Fred Ballou. Fred was good people, but I never had much use for Happy Sam. He went for shaggy hats and lapelled vests, and he had patent leather hair and too much collar had good looks. I was in a hurry and didn't want to talk to anyone, but Sam grabbed me by the arm. "Slow down, mug, slow down! Long time no see. Where you bound in such a hurry?" "Yeah, I'm going over to 10th to see a man about you." Sam quit grinning and Fred walked over. "Why can't you guys quit knocking each other?" he asked quietly. If it weren't for Fred, Sam and I would have crossed bows even more than we did, which was still altogether too much. "I will always speak civilly to a human being," I said. "Sam is different." Sam said, "Don't set yourself up, chum. I'm cutting some ice with a certain party that froze you out." "If you say exactly what you mean, I will probably rap you for it," I flared. Fred pushed hastily between us. "I'll see you later, Sam," he said. He pushed me with some difficulty back away from that scene. Sam stood staring after us for a minute, then put his hands in his pockets, shrugged, grinned, and went jauntily his own way. "Oh, why do you always stand in front of that heel when I want to scrape him off the sidewalk?" I complained. "Calm down, you big lug," Fred grinned. "That bantam wants trouble with you because of Audrey. If you mess him up, he'll go running to her about it, and then you'll be really out." "Yeah, so I am already. So what?" He glanced at me. "That's up to you." Then, seeing my face, he said quickly, "Okay, okay, don't tell me. It's none of my business, I know. How have you been?" I was quiet for a while, walking along. Fred was a darn good egg. You could tell a guy like that practically anything. Finally, I said, I am looking for a job, Fred. He nodded. Thought you would. Doing what? Anybody else, knowing me, would have hooted and howled. Well, I... What the hell? I thought I'll tell him. If he thinks I'm nuts, he won't say to anybody but me. Old Fred didn't look like much with his sandy hair and his rimless specs and those stooped shoulders that too much book reading had given him, but he had sense. I began. I was walking down 10th. By the time I'd come to the part about the ghost of the kid in my room, we had reached 10th Avenue in the late 20s and turned south. I wasn't paying too much attention to where we were, to tell you the truth, and that's why what happened did happen. Before I had a chance to wind up with a question that was bothering me, I have it, what will I do with it, Fred broke in with, hey, where is this place of yours? Why, between 19th and 20th, I said. Holy smoke, we're at 18th, we walked right past it. Fred grinned and swung around. We went back up the avenue with our eyes peeled, and not a sign of the shuttlebob did we see. For the first time, a doubtful look crept into Fred's bland face. He said, Now, you wouldn't kid me, would you, Lug? I tell you, I began, and then I saw a penny lying on the sidewalk. I bent to pick him up and heard him say, Hey, there it is, come on. Ah, I knew it was on this block, I said, and turned toward Fred. Or where Fred had been. Facing me was a blank wall. The whole side of the block was void of people. There was no sign of a shop or Fred Ballou. I stood there for a full 2 minutes, not daring to think. Then I walked downtown toward 20th and uptown to 21st, and I did it again. No shop, no Ballou. I stood frothing up in the uptown corner. What had that guy done? Hopped a passing truck or sunk into the ground or vanished into the shop? Yeah, and no shop there. A wise guy after all. I trod the beat once more with the same results. Then I headed for home. I hadn't gone 20 feet when I heard the pound of someone running, and Fred came panting up and caught my shoulder. We both yelped at once, Hey, where you been? I said, What was the idea of ducking out like that? Man, you must have covered 100 yards in 6 seconds to get away from me while I picked up a penny off of the sidewalk. Duck out nothing, said Ballou, angrier than I'd ever seen him. I saw the store, and I went in, and I thought you were right behind me. I look around, and you're outside, staring at the shop like it was something you didn't believe. Then you walk off. Meantime, the little guy in the store tries to sell me some of his goods. I stall him off, still looking for you. You walk past 2 or 3 times looking in the window. I call you and you don't bat an eyelash. I tell the little guy, hold on, I'll be back in a second with my friend there. He rears back on his heels and laughs like a maniac and waves me out. Come on, dope, let's go back. I mean, that old man really has something there. I'd say I was in the market for some of that stuff of his. Okay, okay, I said, but Fred... I'll swear I did not see the place. Come on, then, lead me to it. I must really be going screwball. Seems like, said Fred. So we went back, and there was no shop at all, not a sign of one. And then and there we had one pip of an argument. He said I'd lied about it in the first place, and I said, well, then, why did he give me that song and dance about his seeing it? And he said there was some kind of a joke I'd pulled on him, and then we both said, oh, yeah, a couple of times and began to throw punches. I broke his glasses for him. He had them in his pocket and fell down on them. I wound up minus a very good friend, and without my question answered, what was I going to do with this talent? Okay, we are in the middle of the short story Shuttlebop by Theodore Sturgeon, and I am going to take a musical break to ease myself, and I see Lister has come in the door, and I want to open it so that he can get in here. It's rather difficult without. And we will be back very shortly here on Hour of the Wolf over WBAI in New York City, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, broadcasting at 99.5 FM.
In the Tower of London, largest life, the ghost of Anne Boleyn walks, I declare. For Anne Boleyn was once King Henry's wife.
King Henry's wife.
Until he made the headsman Bobbert heir.
Bobbert
heir. Ah, yes, he did her wrong long years ago.
Long years ago.
And she comes up at night to tell him so.
So, so, so.
With her head.
Head.
Tucked.
Tucked.
Underneath her arm she walks the bloody tower. With her head.
Head.
Tucked.
Tucked
underneath her arm at the midnight hour. She comes to haunt King Henry, she means giving him what for.
What for?
Gadzook, she's going to tell him off for having spilt her gore.
Her gore.
And just in case the headsman wants to give her an encore, she has her head tucked underneath her arm. Sometimes gay King Henry gives a spread.
Gives a spread.
For all his pals and gals, a ghostly crew.
A ghostly crew.
The headsman carves the joint and cuts the bread.
And cuts the bread.
Then in comes Anne Boleyn to queer the do.
To queer the do.
She holds her head up with a wild war whoop. And Henry says, don't drop it in the soup.
The soup, the soup, the soup.
With her head,
the head.
Tucked.
Tucked.
Underneath her arm she walks the bloody tower. With her head,
the head.
Tucked.
Tucked.
Underneath her arm at the midnight hour. The sentries think that it's a football that she carries in. And when they've had a few, they shout, his army going to win. They think that it's Red Grange instead of poor old Anne Boleyn. With their head tucked underneath their arm. Along the drafty corridors for miles and miles she goes.
She goes.
She often catches cold, poor thing, it's cold there when it blows.
It blows.
And it's awfully awkward for the Queen to have to blow her nose. With her head tucked underneath her arm. With her head tucked underneath her arm.
Boo. This is WBAI in New York, over 99.5 FM and over WBAI.org. The program is Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. Stay tuned for Burn Baby Burn Clapper with Lister coming your way in, 40 minutes or a little less than that. But to do that, we have to continue our short story for the morning, Shuttle Bop by Theodore Sturgeon. So, I was talking to Ginny one afternoon about this and that, when a human leg from the knee down, complete and puffy, drifted between us. I recoiled in horror, but Ginny pushed it gently away with one hand. It bent under the touch and started toward the window, which was a little open at the bottom. The leg floated toward the crack and was sucked through like a cloud of cigarette smoke, reforming again on the other side. It bumbled against the pane for a moment and then ballooned away. My gosh! I breathed. What was that? Ginny laughed. Oh, just one of the things that's all the time flying round.
Did it scare you? I used to be scared, but I saw so many of them that I don't care anymore, so they don't light on me. But what in the name of all that is disgusting are they? Parts.
Jinny was all childish savoir-faire.
Parts of what? People, silly. It's kind of a game, I think. You see, if someone gets hurt and loses something, like a finger or an ear or something, why, the ear, the inside of it, I mean, like me being the inside of the me that they carried out of here, it goes back to where the person who owned it lived last. Then it goes back to the place before that, and so on. It doesn't go very fast. Then when something happens to a whole person, the inside part comes looking for the rest of itself. It picks it up bit by bit. Look! She put out a filmy forefinger and thumb and nipped a flake of gossamer out of the air. I leaned over and looked closely. It was a small section of semi-transparent human skin, ridged and horled. Someone must have cut his finger, said Jinny, matter-of-factly, while he was living in this room. When something happens to... Oh, you see, he'll be back for it. Good heavens, I said. Does this happen to everyone?
I don't know. Some people have to stay where they are, like me. But I guess if you haven't done nothing to deserve being kept in one place, you have to come around all over the place picking up what you lost.
I had thought of more pleasant things in my time. Now, for several days, I had noticed a gray ghost hovering up and down the block. He was always on the street, never inside. He whimpered constantly. He was, or had been, a little inoffensive man of the bowler hat and starched collar type. He paid no attention to me. None of them did, so I was apparently invisible to them. But I saw him so often that pretty soon I realized that I would miss him if he went away. So I decided I would chat with him the next time I saw him. I left the house one morning and stood around for a few minutes in front of the brownstone steps. Sure enough, passing through the flotsam of my new, weird, coexistent world, came the slim figure of the wraith I had noticed, his rabbit face screwed up, his eyes deep and sad, and his swallow-tail coat and striped waistcoat immaculate. I stepped up behind him and said, "Hi!" He started violently and would have run away, I am sure, if he had known where my voice was coming from. "Take it easy, pal. I won't hurt you."
"Who are you?"
"You wouldn't know if I told you. Now stop shivering and tell me about yourself."
He mopped his ghostly face with a ghostly handkerchief and began fumbling nervously with a gold toothpick.
"My word," he said, "no one has talked to me for years. I'm not quite myself, you see."
"Yeah, I see," I said. "Well, take it easy. I just happened to have noticed you wandering around here lately, and I got curious."
"You looking for somebody?"
"Oh, no," he said. Now that he had a chance to talk about his troubles, he forgot to be afraid of the mysterious voice from nowhere that had accosted him. "I'm looking for my home."
"Mm-hmm," I said. "Been looking for it a long time?"
"Oh, yes." His nose twitched. "I left for work one morning a long time ago, and when I got off the ferry at Battery Place, I stopped for a minute to watch the work on the newfangled elevated railroad they were building down there, and all of a sudden there was a loud noise. My goodness, it was terrible. And the next thing I knew, I was standing back from the curb and looking at a man who looked just like me. A girder had fallen, and my word," he mopped his face again, "since then, I have been looking and looking. I can't seem to find anyone who knows where I might have lived, and I don't understand all the things that I see floating around me, and I never thought that I would begin to see the day that the grass would grow on Lower Broadway, and it's terrible." He began to cry.
I felt sorry for him. I could easily see what happened. The shock was so great that even his ghost had amnesia. Poor little egg, he was whole, he could find no rest. The thing interested me. Would a ghost react to the usual cures for amnesia? If so, then what would happen to him?
"You say you got off a ferry boat?"
"Yes."
Well, then you must have lived on the island. Staten Island, over there, across the bay. You really think so? He stared through me, puzzled and hopeful. Why, sure. Say, how'd you like me to take you over there? Maybe we could find your house. Oh, that would be splendid, but, oh, what will my wife say? I grinned. She might want to know where you have been. Anyway, she'll be glad to have you back, I imagine. Come on, let's get going. I gave him a shove in the direction of the subway and strolled down behind him. Once in a while, I got a stare from a passerby walking with one hand out in front of me and talking into thin air. It didn't bother me very much. My companion, though, was very self-conscious about it, for the inhabitants of his world screeched and giggled when they saw him doing practically the same thing. Of all humans, only I was invisible to them, and the little ghost in the bowler hat blushed from embarrassment until I thought he would burst. We hopped a subway, this was a new experience for him, I gathered, and went down to South Ferry. The subway system in New York is a very unpleasant place to one as gifted as I was. Everything that enjoys lurking in the dark hangs out there, and there is quite a crop of dismembered human remains. After this day, I took the bus. Anyway, we got a ferry without waiting. The little gray ghost got a real kick out of the trip. He asked me about the ships in the harbor and their flags, and marveled at the dearth of sailing vessels. He tisked at the Statue of Liberty. The last time he had seen it, he said, was while it still had its original brassy gold color before it got its patina. By this, I placed him in the late 70s. He must have been looking for his home for over 60 years. We landed at the island, and from there I gave him his head. At the top of Fort Hill, he suddenly said, "My name is John Quigg. I live at 45 Fourth Avenue." I had never seen anyone so delighted as he was by the discovery. And from then on it was easy. He turned left, and then right, then left again, straight down for two blocks, and again right. I noticed, he didn't, that the street was marked Winter Avenue. I remembered vaguely that the streets in this section had been numbered years ago. He trotted briskly up the hill, then suddenly stopped and turned vaguely. "I say, are you still with me?" "Still here," I said. "I'm all right now. I can't tell you how much I appreciate this. Is there anything I can do for you?" I considered. "Hardly. We're of different times, you know. Things change." He looked a little pathetically at the new apartment house on the corner and nodded. "I think I know what happened to me," he said softly. "But I guess it's all right. I made a will, and the kids were grown. But if it hadn't been for you, I'd still be wandering about Manhattan. Let's see. Oh, come with me," he suddenly broke into a run. I followed as quickly as I could. Almost at the top of the hill was a huge old shingled house with a silly cupola and a complete lack of paint. It was dirty and tumbled down, and at the sight of it the little fellow's face twisted sadly. He gulped and turned through a gap in the hedge and down beside the house. Casting about in the long grass, he spotted a boulder sunk deep into the turf. "This is it," he said. "Just you dig under that. There is no mention of it in my will, except, well, a small fund to keep paying the box rent. Yes, a safety deposit box in the key and an authorization are under that stone. I hid it," he giggled, "for my wife one night, and never did get a chance to tell her. You can have whatever is any useful to you." He turned to the house, squared his shoulder, and marched in the side door, which banged open for him in a convenient gust of wind. I listened for a moment, then smiled at the tirade that burst forth. Old Quigg was catching real hell from his wife, who'd sat waiting for over 60 years for him. It was a bitter stream of invective, but, well, she must have loved him. She couldn't leave the place until she was complete, if Jenny's theory was correct, and she wasn't really complete until her husband came home. It tickled me. They would be all right now. I found an old pinch bar in the drive and attacked the ground around the stone. It took quite a while, made my hands bleed, but after a while I pried the stone up and was able to scrabble around under it. And sure enough, there was an oiled silk pouch under there. I caught it up and carefully unwrapped the strings about it. Inside was a key and letter addressed to a New York bank designating only bearer and authorizing use of the key. I laughed aloud. Little old meek and mild John Quigg, I'd bet, had set aside some mad money. With a layout like that, a man could take a powder without leaving a single sign. The son of a gun. I would never know just what it was he had up his sleeve, but I'll bet there was a woman in the case. Even fixed it up with his wife, with his will. Well, I should kick. It didn't take me long to get over to the bank. I had a little trouble getting into the vaults because it took quite a while to look up the box in the old records. But I finally cleared the red tape and found myself the proud possessor of just under $8,000 in small bills and not a yellow back among them. Well, from then on, I was pretty well set. What did I do? Well, first I bought some clothes, then I started out to cut ice for myself. I clubbed around a bit and got to know a lot of people, and the more I knew, the more I realized what a bunch of superstitious dopes they were. I couldn't blame anyone for skirting a ladder under which crouched a genuine basilisk, of course, but what the heck, not one in 1,000 have beasts under them. Anyway, my question was answered. I dropped $2,000 on an elegant office with drapes and dim indirect lighting, and I got a phone installed and a little quiet sign on the door, Psychic Consultant. And boy, I did all right. My customers were mostly upper crust because I came high. It was generally no trouble to contact with people's dead relatives, which was usually what they wanted. Most ghosts are crazy to get in touch with this world anyway. That's one of the reasons that almost anyone can become a medium of sorts, if he tries hard enough. Lord knows it doesn't take much to contact the average ghost. Some, of course, were not available. If a man leads a pretty square life and kicks off leaving no loose ends, he gets clear. I never did find out where those clear spirits went to. All I knew was that they weren't to be contacted. But the vast majority of people have to go back and tie up those loose ends after they die, righting a little wrong here, helping someone they've hindered, cleaning up a bit of dirty work. That's where luck itself comes from. I do believe you don't get something for nothing. If you get a nice break, it's been arranged that way by someone who did you dirt in the past, or someone who did wrong to your father, or your grandfather, or maybe your great-uncle Julius. Everything evens up in the long run, and until it does, some poor damn soul is wandering around the earth trying to do something about it. Half of humanity is walking around crabbing about tough breaks. If you and you and you only knew what dozens of powers were begging for the chance to help you if you'll let them. And if you let them, you'll help clear up the mess they've made of their lives here and free to go to wherever it is they go when they're cleaned up. Next time you're in a jam, go away somewhere by yourself and open your mind to these folk. They'll cut in and guide you all right if you can drop your smugness and your mistaken confidence in your own judgment. I had a couple of ghostly strangers to run errands for me. One of them, an ex-murderer by the name of One-Eyed Rachuba, was the fastest spook ever I saw, and when it came to locating a wanted ancestor, then there was Professor Grafe, a frog-faced teacher of social science who embezzled from a charity fund and fallen into the Hudson trying to make a getaway. He could trace the most devious genealogies in mere seconds and deduce the most likely whereabouts of the ghost of a missing relative. The pair of them were all the office force I could use, and although every time they helped out one of my clients, they came closer to freedom for themselves, they were both so entangled with their own sloppy lives that I was sure of their services for years. But do you think I would be satisfied to stay where I was, making money hard, hand over fist, without really working for it? Not me. No. I had to big time. I had to brood over the events of the last few months, and I had to get dramatic about that screwball Audrey, who really wasn't worth my trouble. I had to lie awake nights thinking about Happy Sam and his jibes. It wasn't enough that I proved Audrey wrong when she said I'd never amount to anything. I wasn't happy when I thought about Sam and the 18 a week he pulled down driving a light delivery truck. I had to show them up. I even remembered what the little man in the shuttlebop had said to me about using my talent for bragging or for revenge. It didn't make any difference. I figured I had the edge on everyone, everything. Cocky I was. Why, I could send out one of my ghostly stooges any time and find out exactly what anyone had been doing 3 hours ago, come Michaelmas. With the shade of the professor at my shoulder, I could backtrack on any far-fetched statement and give immediate and logical reasons for backtracking. No one had anything on me, and I could out-talk, out-maneuver, and outsmart anyone on Earth. That was really quite a feller, I began to think. So, what's the use of my doing as well as this when the gang on West Side don't know anything about it? And man, would that half-wit Happy Sam burn up if he saw me drifting down Broadway in my new $8,000 roadster. And to think I'd waste my time and tears on a dope like Audrey. In other words, I was tripping up on an inferiority complex. I acted like a very damn fool, which I was. I went over to the West Side. It was a chilly, late winter night. I'd taken a lot of trouble to dress myself and my car so we'd be bright and shiny and would knock some eyes out. Pretty I couldn't brighten up my brains a little. I drove up in front of Casey's pool room, being careful to do it too fast and concentrating on shrieks from the tires and a shuddering 24-cylinder roar from the engine before I cut the switch. I didn't hurry to get out of the car, either. Just leaned back, lit a 50-cent cigar, and then tipped my hat over one ear and touched the horn button, causing it to play Tuxedo Junction for 48 seconds. Then I looked out over at the pool hall. For a minute, I thought that I shouldn't have come, that it was the effect my return to the fold was going to have. And from then on, I forgot about anything except how to get out of here. There were two figures slouched in the glowing doorway of the pool room. It was up a small side street so short that the city had depended on the place, an old institution to supply the street lighting. Looking carefully, I made out one of the silhouetted figures as Happy Sam, the other was Fred Ballou. They looked out at me. They didn't move. They didn't say anything. And when I said, "Hiya, small fry, remember me?" I noticed that along the darkened wall flanking the bright doorway were ranked the whole crowd of them, the whole gang. It was a shock. It was a little too casually perfect. I didn't like it. "Hi," said Fred quietly. I knew he wouldn't like the big timing. I didn't expect any of them to like it, of course, but Fred's dislike sprang from distaste, the others from resentment, and for the first time I felt a little cheap. I climbed out over the door of the roadster and let them have a gander at my fine feathers. Sam snorted and said, "Jelly bean," very clearly. Someone else giggled, and from the darkness beside the building came a high-pitched woo-woo. I walked up to Sam, and I grinned at him. I didn't feel like grinning. "I ain't seen you in so long I almost forgot what a heel you were," I said. "How you making?" "I'm doing all right," he said, and added offensively, "I'm still working for a living." The murmur that ran through the crowd told me that the really smart thing to do was to get back into that shiny new automobile and hoot along out of there. I stayed. "Well, eyes, huh?" I said weakly. They'd been drinking, I realized, all of them. I was suddenly in a spot. Sam put his hands in his pockets and looked at me down his nose. It was the only short man that could ever do that to me. After a thick silence, he said, "Better get back to your crystal balls, phony. We like guys that sweat. We even like guys that got rackets if they run them because they're smarter or tougher than the next one. But luck and gab ain't enough scram." I looked around helplessly. I was getting what I had begged for. I mean, what had I expected, anyway? Had I thought that these boys would crowd around and shake my hand off for acting this way? There was something missing somewhere, and when I realized what it was, it hit me. Fred Ballou. He was just standing there saying nothing. The old equalizer wasn't functioning anymore. Fred was not aiming to stop any trouble between me and Sam. I had never been so alone in all my life. They hardly moved, but they were around me suddenly. If I couldn't think of something quickly, I was going to be mobbed. And when those mugs started mobbing a man, they did it up just fine. I drew a deep breath. "I'm not asking for anything from you, Sam. Nothing. That means advice, you see?" "Oh, you're getting it," he flared. "You and your seances. We heard about you hanging up widow women for $50 a throw to talk to their dear departed psychic investigator. What a line. Go on, beat it." I had a leg to stand on now. "A phony? Huh? Why, you gabby Irishman, I'll bet I could put a haunt on you that would make that hair of yours stand on end if you got guts enough to go where I tell you to go." "You bet. That's a laugh. Listen to that, gang." He laughed, then turned to me and talked through one side of his mouth. "All right, you wanted it. Come on, rich guy, you're called. Fred will hold the stakes. How about 10 of your lousy bucks for every one of mine? Here, Fred, hold this sawbuck." "I'll give you 20 to 1, I said half hysterically, "and I'll take you to a place where you'll run up against the homeliest, plum meanest old haunt that you ever heard of." The crowd roared. Sam laughed with him, but he didn't try to back out. With any of that gang, a bet was a bet. He had taken me up, and he had set odds, and he was bound. I just nodded and put 2 century notes into Fred Ballou's hand. Fred and Sam climbed into the car, and just as we started, Sam leaned out and waved. "See you in hell, fellas," he said. "I'm going to raise me a ghost, and one of us is going to scare the other one to death." I honked my horn to drown out the whooping and hollering from the sidewalk and got out of there. I turned up the parkway and headed out of town. "Where to?" Fred asked after a while. "Stick around," I said, still not knowing. There must be some place not far from here where I could find an honest-to-God haunt, I thought, one that would make Sam backtrack and set me up with the boys again. I opened the compartment in the dashboard and let Ikey out. There was a little twisted imp who got his tail caught in between 2 sheets of steel when they were assembling the car, and he had to stay there until it was junked. "Hey, Ike," I whispered. He looked up, the gleam of the compartment light shining redly in his bright little eyes. "Whistle for the professor, will you? I don't want to yell because the smugs in the back seat will hear me. They can't hear you." "Yeah, okay, boss," he said, and putting his fingers to his lips, he gave vent to a blood-curdling, howling scream. There was the professor's call letters, as it were. The old man flew ahead of the car, circled around, and slid in beside me through the window, which I had opened a crack for him. "My goodness," he panted, "I wish you wouldn't summon me to a location which is traveling with this high degree of celerity. It was all I could do to catch up with you." "Don't give me that, professor," I whispered. "You can catch a stratoliner if you want to. Listen, I got a guy here in the back who wants to get a real scare from a ghost. Do you know anything around here?" The professor put on his ghostly pince-nez. "Why, yes, you remember my telling you about the Wolfmeyer place?" "Oh, he's bad. It'll serve your purpose admirably, but don't ask me to go there with you. None of us ever associates with Wolfmeyer, and for heaven's sake, be careful." "I guess I can handle him. Where is it?" He gave me directions, bade me good night, and left. I was a little surprised. The professor traveled around with me a great deal, and I'd never seen him refuse a chance to see some new scenery. I shrugged it off and went my way. I guess I just didn't know better. I headed out of town and into the country to a certain old farmhouse. Wolf Meyer, a Pennsylvania Dutchman, had hanged himself there. He had been and was a bad egg. Instead of being a nice guy about it all, he was the rebel type. He knew perfectly well that unless he did plenty of good to make up for the evil, he'd be stuck where he was for the rest of eternity. That didn't seem to bother him at all. He got surly and became a really bad spook. 8 people had died in that house since the old man rotted off his own rope. 3 of them were tenants who had rented the place, and 3 were hobos, and 2 were psychic investigators. They had all hanged themselves. That's the way Wolfmeyer worked. I think he really enjoyed haunting. He certainly was thorough about it anyway. I didn't want to do any real harm to Happy Sam. I just wanted to teach him a lesson. And look what happened. We reached the place just before midnight. No one had said much except that I told Fred and Sam about Wolfmeyer and pretty well what was to be expected from him. They did a good deal of laughing about it, so I just shut up and drove. The next item of conversation was Fred's when he made the terms of the bet. To win, Sam was to stay in the house until dawn. He wasn't to call for help, and he wasn't to leave. He had to bring in a coil of rope, tie a noose in one end, and string the other one up on Wolf Meyer's beam, the great oaken beam on which the old man had hung himself and 8 others after him. This was an added temptation to Wolf Meyer to work on Happy Sam, and was my idea. I was to go in with Sam to watch him in case the thing became dangerous. Fred was to stay in the car 100 yards down the road and wait. I parked the car at the agreed distance, and Sam and I go out. Sam had my tow rope over the shoulder, already noosed. Fred had quieted down considerably, and his face was real serious. "I don't think I like this," he said, looking up the road at the house. It hunched back from the highway and looked like a malign being deep in thought. I said, "Well, Sam, you want to just pay up now and call it quits?" He followed Fred's gaze. Sure was a dreary-looking place, and his liquor had fizzled away. He thought a minute, then shrugged and grinned. I had to admire the rat. I'll go through with it. You can't bluff me with scenery, you phony. Suddenly Fred piped up. I don't think he's a phony, Sam. He showed me something one day over on 10th Avenue, a little store. There was something funny about it. We had a little scrap afterward, and I was sore for a long time, but I think he's got something there. The resistance made Sam stubborn, though. I could see by his face that he knew better. Come on, phony, he said, and swung up the road. We climbed into the house by the way of a cellar door in the window on the first floor. I hauled out a flashlight and lit up the beam. It was only one of many that delighted in turning the sound of one's footsteps into laughing whispers that ran round and round the rooms and the halls and would not die. Under the famous beam, the dusty floor was dark-stained. I gave Sam a hand in fixing the rope, and then clicked off the light. It must have been tough on him, then. I didn't mind, because I knew I could see anything before it got to me, and even then no ghost could see me. Not even that, for me, the walls and floors and ceilings were lit with the phosphorescent, many-hued glow of the ever-present ghost plants. For its airy effect, I wish Sam could see the ghost molds feeding greedily on the stain under the beam. Sam was already breathing heavily, but I knew it would take more than just darkness and silence to get his goat. He would have to be alone, and then he'd have to have a visitor or so. "So long, kid," I said, slapping him on the shoulder. I turned and walked out the room. I let him hear me go out of the house, and then I crept silently back in. It was, without a doubt, the most deserted place I had ever seen. I mean, even ghosts stayed away from it, excepting, of course, Wolf Meyer's. There was just the luxurious vegetation visible to all but me, and the deep silence rippled by Sam's breath. After 10 minutes or so, I knew for certain that Happy Sam had more guts than I'd ever credited him with. He had to be scared. He couldn't or wouldn't scare himself. I was looking down the doorway opposite when I realized that for some minutes there had been the palest of pale glows there. It brightened as I watched, brightened and flickered gently. It was green, the green of things moldy and rotting away, and with it a subtly harrowing stench. It was the smell of flesh so very, very dead that it had ceased to be really odorous. It was utterly horrible, and I was honestly scared out of my wits. It was some moments before the comforting thought of my invulnerability came back to me, and I shrank lower and closer to the wall and watched, and Wolfmeyer came in. He was the ghost of an old, old man. He wore a flowing, filthy robe, and his bare forearms thrust out in front of him were stringy and strong. His head, with its tangled hair and beard, quivered on a broken, ruined neck like the blade of a knife just thrown into soft wood. Each slow step as he crossed the room set his head quivering again. His eyes were alight, red they were, with great, deep, green flames buried in them. His canine teeth had lengthened into yellow, blunt tusks, and they were like pillars supporting his crooked grin. The putrescent green glow was a horrid halo around him. He was a bright and evil thing. He passed me, completely unconscious of my presence, and paused at the door of the room where Sam waited by the rope. He stood just outside it, his claws extended, the quivering of his head slowly dying. He stared in at Sam and suddenly opened his mouth and howled. It was a dead, quiet sound, one that might have come from the throat of a distant dog, but though I couldn't see into the other room, I knew that Sam had jerked his head around and was staring at the ghost. Wolfmeyer raised his arms a trifle, seemed to totter a bit, and moved into the room. I snapped myself out of the crawling terror that gripped me and scrambled to my feet. If I didn't move fast, tiptoeing swiftly to the door, I stopped just long enough to see Wolfmeyer beating his arms about erratically over his head, a movement that made his robe flutter and his whole figure pulsate in the green light, just long enough to see Sam on his feet, wide-eyed, staggering back and back toward the rope. He clutched his throat and opened his mouth and made no sound, and his head tilted, his neck bent, his twisted face gaped at the ceiling as he clumped backward away from the ghost and into the ready noose. And then I leaned over Wolfmeyer's shoulder, put my lips to his ear, and said, "Boo." I almost laughed. Wolfmeyer gave a little squeak, jumped maybe 10 feet, and without stopping to look around, high-tailed out of the room so fast that he was just a blur. That was one scared old spook. At the same time, Happy Sam straightened, his face relaxed and relieved, and sat down with a bump under the noose. That was as close a thing as ever I wanted to see. He sat there, face soaking wet with cold sweat, his hands between his knees, staring limply at his feet. "That'll show you," I exulted and walked over. "Pay up, scum, and may you starve for that week's pay." He didn't move. I guess he was plenty shocked. "Come on, pull yourself together. Haven't you seen enough? That old fellow's going to be back any second now. Get on your feet." He didn't move. "Sam!" He didn't move. "Sam!" I clutched at his shoulder. He pitched over sideways and lay still. He was quite dead. I didn't do anything for a while, and I didn't say anything. Then I said hopelessly as I knelt there, "Oh, Sam, cut it out, fella." After a minute, I rose slowly and started for the door. I'd taken 3 steps when I stopped. Something was happening. I rubbed my hand over my eyes. It was getting dark. The vague luminescence of the vines and flowers of the ghost world was getting dimmer, fading, fading. This had never happened before. "No difference," I told myself desperately. "It's happening now, all right. I've got to get out of here. You see? You see, it was the stuff that damn stuff from the Chalobop. It was wearing off. And when Sam died, it it stopped working on me. What was this? What I had to pay for the bottle? Was this what was to happen if I used it for revenge? The light was almost gone, and now it was gone. I couldn't see a thing in the room but one of the doors. Why could I see that doorway? What was that pale green light that set off its dusty frame? Wolfmeyer. I gotta get out of here. I couldn't see ghosts anymore. Ghosts now could see me. I ran. I darted across the dark room and smashed into the wall on the other side. I reeled back from it, blood spouting from between the fingers I slapped in my face. I ran again. Another wall clubbed me. Where was that other door? I ran again, struck a wall, I screamed, and I ran again. I tripped over Sam's body. My head went through the noose. It whipped down on my windpipe, and my neck broke with an agonizing crunch. I floundered there for half a minute and dangled. Dead as hell was I. Wolfmeyer. He laughed and laughed. Fred found me and Sam in the morning. He took our bodies away in the car. Now I've got to stay here and haunt this damn old house. Me and Wolfmeyer. Shuttlebop by Theodore Sturgeon. Well, I'm over time. Thank you, Lister, for putting up with that. It ran like 15 seconds late. Let me just outro by telling people, come next Tuesday, November 5th, to New York Review of Science Fiction Readings. You want to know more, it goes to my website, ourwolf.com, or to Facebook and look for NYRSF, N-Y-R-S-F Readings. And you'll see all about Rajan Khanna and Fran Wilde, and that will tell you all about the reading. Admission is a penny. A penny for a guy. It's Guy Fawkes Day. So you got to pay. It's usually free, but this time you got to pay a penny for the guy. Okay, next week my guest will be a Dr. Danielle Friedman. And a fine guest she shall be. Thank you all for listening. This has been Hour of the Wolf. My name's Jim Freund. Do you want to just take in, or should I put on a cut of music?
You got to play the theme, man.
I got to play the theme. Except I was going to play my Halloween theme. But okay.
Play the Halloween theme.
Okay, yeah. Which was, what was I thinking?
For me and Max Schmidt.
Yeah, for me and Max Schmidt. No, should I play a Lou Reed song? Okay, I'm going to play a Lou Reed Halloween song. Bless Lou Reed. I used to see him at J&R Music World in the days when they were the only place that covered Atari computers, and I would go in there, and Lou Reed hung out there all the time. And I don't know what other people say. Some people say he was sharp-spoken. I thought he was like the nicest guy I had met.
I think so.
And it was like 30 years ago.
And he's everything I think of New York.
Yeah, he is. And this is an extremely New York song from an extremely New York guy. And rest in peace, Lou Reed. Thanks for listening.
Town fair singing out Proud Mary as she cruises Christopher Street. And some southern queen is acting loud and mean where the docks and the badlands meet. This Halloween is something to be sure of. Especially to be here without you. There's a Greta Garbo and an Alfred Hitchcock and some black Jamaican stud. There's five Cinderellas and some leather drags. I almost fell into my mug. There's a Crawford Davis and a tacky Cary Grant. And some homeboys looking for trouble down here from the Bronx. But there ain't no Harry and no Virgin Mary. You won't hear those voices again. And Johnny Rio and Rotten Rita, you never see those faces again. This Halloween is something to be sure of. Especially to be here without you. There's the Born Again Losers and the Lavender Boozers and some crack team from Washington Heights. The boys from Avenue B, the girls from Avenue D, are Tinkerbell and tights. this celebration somehow gets me down. Especially when I see you're not around. There's no Peter Pedantic saying things romantic in Latin, Greek, or Spic. There's no Three Bananas or Brandon Alexander dishing all their tricks. It's a different feeling that I have today. Especially when I know you've gone away. There's a girl from Soho with a t-shirt saying I blow. She's with the Jive 5, 2 plus 3. And the girl for pay dates are giving cut rates or else doing it for free. The past keeps knock, knock, knocking on my door. And I don't want to hear it anymore. No consolations, please, for feeling funky. I gotta get my head above my knees. But it makes me mad and it makes me sad. And then I start to freeze. In the back of my mind, I was afraid it might be true. In the back of my mind, I was afraid that they meant you. The Halloween parade. At the Halloween parade. At the Halloween parade. See you next year at the Halloween parade.
Thank you. the people who hate this. These are the places we'll hit.
Panama, talking about Peru, Azania, Brixton, Belfast, and forget Korea, Beirut, and forget Haiti, Iran, Puerto Rico, Colombia, Mexico. Talking about Uptown, Harlem, New York City, y'all, and Nicaragua, East and South Central LA, California, IA, Miami, do or die, Bed-Stuy, never ran, never will, Brownsville, boogie down, South Bronx, yeah.
My man Joey to jail, and now they got him in court because he burned the flag. That's the name of the game. Well, I quit playing. I doubt the suckers want you to hear what I'm saying about this nation. Freedom supposed to be the format, but I step on your flag like it's a floor mat. Maim and mangle, the star spangle. I'm not trying to diss you. I use the flag like toilet tissue to wipe my black ass. What? You think that I'm a jackass? I see a flag and I attack fast with some fire. My desire to burn what Betty Ross sold up. The truth I show up about America, America, home. Land the free, boom, this is the home of the slave. Now hold on just a mother minute. You gave me freedom of speech in the First Amendment. So why trying to scold me when I toss you the flag? I'm only doing what you told me. You don't like it, so what? I'm not scared of you. Your flag, America too. See, I made up this new rule and I want y'all to learn it. Strike a match to the American flag and burn.
The name is Lister. Yo, this is Burn Baby Burn. 11 minutes after 3 o'clock, we'll do this. We'll burn this imperialist flag to ashes. Burn Baby Burn. Had no choice, got to name the show. Burn Baby Burn. 99 Sinker Lister Live right here until 5 o'clock when background briefing comes in. Tune in. Yo. The Midnight Ravers with Terry Wilson, the very best of WBAI. Yes, sir. On a Friday, you know, after midnight. Just before Acte Selassie. Liquid Sound Loud. Lick it back on a Sabado. Seen? Me entiende? Hey. Sinker Lister Live right here until 5 o'clock. There we go. Rubber dub.